Fly James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Fly! Fly, do you hear me? Give my creation fly!
So this was fun.
You're going to like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Get calmed down. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast.
Country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you read?
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Hey, everybody. Glad to be with you this afternoon. Glad that you're along with us. We're going to be here from 3 to 6 today, kind of filling in for Bruce there in that last hour. He'll be back with us real soon. And Bob will be along with us at 6, from 6 to 10 tonight. So thanks so much for joining us here on the Head On Radio Network at the Guy James Show. Glad and proud to have you all as listeners. How you doing today? My, it's been another busy news day, and we'll get into a little bit of everything today, just quite a little bit of everything, and we hope you'll stick around for the whole 3 hours and have something to contribute to the program, and you may do that by giving us a call at 866-546-5254, 866-546-5254. Glad to have all of you give us a call today. I noticed on Mark's show they were talking about the border, had a ferocious argument going over the border issues, and I don't know. I've kind of got an opinion about that. I really do, and I've never expressed it real strongly, and I know a lot of you will disagree with me. I know a lot of the conservatives particularly disagree with me. I see that border fence as sort of, and this is not going to be the subject of the show today, but I did want to comment on it. I see the border fence as kind of an experiment in social engineering, and I'm not so sure that we can do that. I'm not so sure that any nation on earth has ever been very successful at social engineering. I think when the time comes that a nation is going to be changed, a certain population, it takes over a majority. I think that's just how it is, and I don't know that we're going to be able to change that. I'm just looking at it from a practical point of view. If this country becomes predominantly Spanish-American someday, Hispanic, Latino, whatever you want to, whatever terms you like to use, I don't know that that can be stopped. I really don't. To be perfectly honest with you, I don't know that it should be stopped. So we'll see. You want a liberal view? There is a liberal view. But it's my honest opinion. I know there's problems with that. There's problems with what we do on this border issue, no matter what we do. Anyway, that's not the subject of the program today. We're going to be, in the second hour, we're going to have an expert, one of the nation's foremost experts, a gentleman by the name of Bruce Cummings. He's a specialist on Korea. He's a professor at the University of Chicago, and he's written many books on Korea and Asia. He's actually a guy that Bush ought to have in his administration. He ought to have a guy like Bruce over in North Korea right now, trying to negotiate with these people. And I don't care who you are. I think you can negotiate. And so I would love to see experts like Bruce Cummings over there making our case. So we're going to do that, and that'll be in the second hour. We don't have any guests the first hour. We don't have any guests in the third hour today. We're gonna wing it that third hour. It's going to kind of be an open mic, and you can Well, call in and do whatever you like. Well, not whatever. Well, no, wait a minute. We're not bound by FCC rules, so you can call in and do whatever you like. Even if some of you freepers are listening, you can call in and say what you like. I don't care. Did I mention that? I was down in Crawford, Texas last year and got protested by a bunch of freepers. Whoa, man. You talk about a group of losers. My God, I couldn't believe it. I can't remember the gal's name, but we were riding around in this SUV to surveying the whole situation in Crawford, Texas. And there was a lady attorney that was from San Antonio that was chauffeuring me around Crawford. And we had the road blocked by this group of freepers that were trying to keep us away from this little place where we wanted to go. And my God, what a group. They were scary. At first I thought they had a Halloween mask on, but they didn't. And what a motley crew. Ah, yes. Actually, a motley crew would make them look real well-dressed. And speaking of well-dressed, what is it with George Bush? Have you wonder? I just wonder. I've noticed this several times, and I don't know if you guys pick up on some of this little junk that I do. But have you noticed that just about every news conference that he does, question and answer period, that he'll pick somebody out and say, "My, you look nice today. You've got such a beautiful..." It's always a guy, too. "Oh, what a beautiful suit you got on today," he told this one guy. "Man, that's a good-looking suit. You really look good in that suit, Bush." Wonder what the deal is with him. I don't know. Is there something about Georgie we don't know? I don't know. I'm just saying. I'm just asking. That's all. Somebody says he was embarrassing today on the chat room. And by the way, welcome to everybody on the Head On Radio Network chat room. Glad to have all of you folks along with us, too, along with our friends over at Democratic Underground and Democrats.com and SmirkingChimp.com and a whole bunch of the websites. Glad to have all of you folks along with us today. I did see, looking at the news right before the program started, that OPEC, and what a surprise, OPEC says they're going to raise prices next month. They're going to cut down production by 1 million barrels per day so that they can raise prices next month. To all of us that got criticized for being somewhat cynical toward the Bush administration, people looking at us and saying, "You don't really think that they're manipulating gas prices just for an election, do you?" For all of you that said that to some of us who think it, there you go. There you go, right there. OPEC could raise prices right now, couldn't they? Couldn't they cut the production back right now if they wished? I mean, if they're doing it to raise prices, why not do it right now? But they're going to wait till next month. Probably along about November the 5th or 6th, wouldn't you say? Mm-hmm. I think so. Hey, yesterday, I promised you that we were going to talk a little bit anyway about this media problem and how we're constantly getting accused of... Well, you know what they say, the liberal media. And my answer to that always is, liberal media, what liberal media? Who, really? And you stop and think about it. How? What liberal media are they talking about, okay? Of course, the righties will tell you that all the network news are liberal. That's a crock if I ever heard one. They're getting more and more conservative every day. The biggest newspaper in the United States circulation-wise, other than that rag USA Today, I believe is the Wall Street Journal. Is that a liberal newspaper? We've got Hannity and Combs on at night. We've got Fox all day, 24/7 conservative media. We've got O'Reilly on there, the biggest one of all. We've got Hannity, we've got Rush, we've got Gallagher, who else? Laura Ingraham, a host of right-wing shows. Liberal media, liberal media, liberal media. That's all they like to talk about. Don't you get tired of hearing about such a complete lie? I know I do. And I've invited Hannity and Limbaugh and several, and I have. I'm not kidding you about this. About once a month, I get on the horn, no pun intended, and invite Hannity and Limbaugh and several of the other big-mouth right-wing liars on this program to debate the subject of the liberal media that they're always crowing about. And they do talk about it just about every single day, and you'd think they'd want to come on and just shoot down some poor liberal media guy like me and put that thing to rest. Liberal media is a myth, And the next time one of your idiot conservative friends starts talking about the overwhelming liberal media, I wish you'd remind him of some of these little tidbits. Mentioned that the very liberal Fox News channel has more viewers than CNN. Quite a bit more, actually. Mentioned that the longest-running show on PBS ever was that liberal show Firing Line with that liberal William Buckley on it. You might want to mention that the Sunday PBS pundit shows, the McLaughlin Group, is named and orchestrated by that liberal John McLaughlin with a panel of three conservatives, including Mr. McLaughlin, one moderate and one liberal. Mention that the second largest media organization in America is owned and controlled by that liberal Rupert Murdoch. Mention that the most listened to talk radio show in America is from that liberal Rush Limbaugh. Or you might want to mention that the most listened to political commentary on radio in America for the past 50 years is that liberal Paul Harvey. Or you could mention that the magazine with the largest circulation in America, TV Guide, is owned and controlled by that liberal Rupert Murdoch. That name keeps coming up, doesn't it, Rupert Murdoch? Mention that the daily newspaper with the highest circulation other than USA is, in fact, the Wall Street Journal. Mention that Newsweek's back page, it seems 3 out of 4 times, the editorial page is from that liberal George Will. And you all also might want to mention that ABC, CBS, NBC, and their owners, Disney, Westinghouse, and General Electric, are liberal corporations, as we all know. You could mention that over 90% of the daily newspapers over the past 16 years have endorsed such liberals as Reagan, Bush, Bush, Dole, and Bush for president. You could mention that you can't even turn on a radio on the AM dial without hearing such liberals as Rush Limbaugh, Gordon Liddy, Ken Hamblin, Michael Reagan, Armstrong Williams, Bill O'Reilly, Sean Hannity, Laura Schlesinger, and a host of others pushing their liberal propaganda. And when you're done mentioning all of that, look them squarely in the eye and ask them what the problem is. Is it that they think you are stupid? Or is it more likely that they are stupid? Liberal media, my ass. I get so tired of hearing that every day. Every day. And there are people, I've got relatives that believe it. I'm not just picking on just anybody. I have relatives that believe that, threw that up to me quite recently. Well, you know, that liberal media, you're just part of that liberal media that controls everything. Yeah. You take the liberal media's audience in this entire country and add it all up, and it doesn't add up to the proverbial fart in a windstorm now, does it? No, not really. The vaunted Air America Network. Is it so liberal now? Is it? With the most liberal person on it gone? I don't think it's so liberal. This is the most liberal and progressive network in America right here, Head On Radio Network. And yes, and I'm reminded on the chat room, don't forget all those liberal Christian stations all over America. Every single one of them. Every single one of them. Might as well be promoting, they might as well have a big RNC advertisement on each and every one of them. Oh, well. Hey, you can give us a call, 866-546-5254, 866-546-5254. I did want to mention something that I found absolutely fascinating. Today I talked to a Republican who told me that this scandal involving Foley only reinforced his conservative Christian convictions. You got that? This is today's evangelical right. The more incompetent, the more repulsive and hypocritical their elected officials become, the more they believe in the Republican Party. Bad is therefore good, and the worse the better, presumably, and because it clarifies and it confirms things for them. If congressional Republicans had any sense at all, they'd probably run naked through the streets of D.C., swigging whiskey, cavorting with hookers, and frantically instant messaging teenagers. Because the worse, the better. This reinforced his conservative Christian convictions. Amazing. Absolutely amazing. And let me play a quick cut about that. I was shocked by this. And I'll get to the phones here in just a second. You just hang right on, and I'll be right with you. But speaking about evangelicals and how they've been hoodwinked, did you hear this last night?
Yes, everyone agrees here that this story, emblematic of whatever.
Wait, just emblematic of deeper than that, though, because the deep truth is that the elites in the Republican Party have pure contempt for the evangelicals who put their party in power. I know them because I grew up with them, because I live with them, they live in my street, because I live in Washington, and I know that everybody in our world has contempt for the evangelicals. And the evangelicals know that, and they're beginning to learn that even their own leaders sort of look askance at them and don't share their values.
So this gay marriage issue and other issues related to the gay lifestyle are simply tools to get
That's exactly right. It's pandering to the base in the most cynical way, and the base is beginning to figure it out. Okay. They're like, well, what if
you see, I think the right is right to be mad about this. They have been duped by these people.
And there you have it, right straight from a right-winger's mouth. I mean, Tucker Carlson said it right there. I mean, we've all understood that for a long time, that the evangelical right is being hoodwinked by the neocons. And there you had one of them, one of the premier neocons, just spitting it out, telling the truth for a change. Amazing. And let's go to the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Yeah, hi, Guy. This is Phil in Daytona Beach. How are you today?
Hi, Phil. I'm real good.
Oh, good. The reason why I called was when you just ran off that list of liberal media tidbits, you know, how to answer a right-winger with all that information. I didn't have time to write it all down, and I was wondering if someone on the Guy James Show would be able to put that in writing and maybe post it to the website or not. I'm sure you got your hands full, but boy, I'd love to carry that around with me and say, okay, let's go over this liberal
Shoot me an email.
Okay, and
Guy James at the Guy James Show.
Yeah, okay, I'll do that. One other comment. I know that the horn goes off the air at certain times, and I did want to plug another show on a. Is that all right?
Well, I suppose so.
Well, lately, you know, with everything that's going, the destruction of our Constitution Military, whatever it is, act where Bush can now round up Americans and put them away in Halliburton prison camps. I've been listening to the Alex Jones Show, who for some may be out there, but I'm finding it more and more interesting, and he seems to back up everything he says. And like some of the shows that run on the Internet, they loop. So he's on from 12 noon to 3, and then the three-hour program loops for the rest of the day on the Internet. And I saw one of his films called The Terror Storm, and they suggest to watch it free by going to Google Video and typing in Terror Storm and, watch some of it. You may want to watch all of it, but it's about terrorism and, you know, a different take on it than what the government's telling us. And in order to get to his show, it's Infowars.com. You can listen on the web, you know. And of course, you want to listen to the horn first, but when you do have time and you're not listening to the horn, please take a look at that. There's a lot going on.
What's the name you said the guy's name is?
The guy's name is Alex Jones, and he produces a bunch of documentaries. And this guy actually predicted 9/11 in July of 2001.
Well, I kind of live in a cave down here in Fort Myers area, so I guess I had to ask who he was.
Sure. Alex Jones, and his website is Infowars.com. And he's very much on into stuff we don't hear about on the mainstream. You're familiar with Congressman Ron Paul out of Texas?
Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, he's got legitimate people on there, and there's a lot of questions regarding the official story of 9/11, and, you know, I'm not proclaiming any answer to it, but I do know the more I look into it, the more questions arise, and I think folks should look into it, especially since the whole Bush administration disaster has been based on this 9/11. a couple of wars, one a third one about to start, you know, taking away our rights.
Well, they've ruled with fear ever since then.
Yeah.
And like we said yesterday, you know, Roosevelt said we've got nothing to fear but fear itself. And the Bush motto is all you've got is fear, and we'll take care of you. You know, that's all you've got is fear. You worry about the fear and we'll take care of you. I mean, that's how far it's come.
Hitler said that, and Stalin, and, you know, Sinclair Lewis, is that it, who said that when fascism comes to America, it'll be wrapped in the flag and carrying a cross?
Yep, that's right.
And wasn't his book called It Can't Happen Here?
Yeah, Can't Happen Here. Yeah.
And that was written back when, in the 40s or 30s?
Yeah, like back before my day. But
you
know, I guess you can kind of see that coming in any advanced society. Human nature being what it is, the Brits, fortunately, have gotten along for quite a lot longer than we have without heading that way so much. But gee whiz, it only took us a little over 200 years to get there, and I'm ashamed of that fact.
Yeah, well, I urge people to head over to Infowars.com and look into it. There's information there that even the Horn and liberal radio doesn't have time to put out, you know. And what about this North American Union? You know, the governor in Texas is actually building these super highways that are supposed to go up through the middle of the United States.
Yeah, I understand. The hub's going to be right around Kansas City.
Split
up off through Canada and then up to, yeah.
People don't realize Bush signed some kind of treaty with Vincente Fox and the Canadian Prime Minister.
Yeah, it's going to head to a port about halfway down Mexico someplace, coming in
right off
the Pacific.
You know, and I think, hey, you union guys out there in the longshoremen's unions out on the East and West Coast, you might want to go over to InfoWars and look at this, because, you know, they're going to do away with you guys, and you're going to have cheap labor, Mexican labor. They say they want to build a fence, but it's all BS, just like they were going to rebuild New Orleans, just like they were going to rebuild Afghanistan. It's all a bunch of bull. And the reason why I'm calling in is because I really feel a sense of urgency, Guy. You know, this stuff is really happening, and it's happening fast.
It's accelerating, isn't it? The pace,
yeah.
The pace is being stepped up considerably.
We really have to be the media ourselves and inform others, you know, and that's why I'm calling in. So please, folks, go over to Google Video and type in Terror Storm and then tell others to do it. You know, this is urgent.
Well, information is a great thing, and that's one great thing about the Internet. You have a plethora, as it were, of information available, and you can pick and sort and choose and decide what's right for you and what isn't, and you know, sift through it and make judgments about what you like and what you don't. Man, it's sure a great thing to have the Internet available, isn't it?
Well, it's getting attacked right now, Guy. You know, the Congress that just gave away our habeas corpus and allowed the president to consider Americans enemy combatants, you know, last week before coming home to ask us for money to reelect, you know, they're going to allow the telecoms to privatize the internet.
Well, you know, I had this conversation, and I'm glad you brought that up. I had this conversation with an acquaintance just yesterday. He's talking about it. Well, hey, you're paranoid. You're worried about them taking away your rights. I said, look, they just took away the rights of habeas corpus to a lot of people. What more important thing could you take away than that? If they can take that away, they can take anything away.
Well, the internet is our, you know, our last method of free speech. I mean, look, they can round us up on the corner right now and say this is not a free speech zone.
They can keep your letters to the editor out of the newspaper. They can keep your voice off of terrestrial radio. They can keep you off of TV. But as of now, at least we have the internet where we can converse with one another and get the truth out to one another.
And for folks who are not hip to net neutrality, you know, type that into Google too, and get informed, because the big money telecoms are going after the internet.
That's right, they are.
And if they get the internet, we're screwed.
Hey, thanks so much for your call. Good call. Enjoyed it. Call us again.
Thank you. A lot, guy.
Bye.
Great
now.
Program. Thank you.
Daytona Beach. Former site of, well, first NASCAR race used to take place up there. I have a cousin that works up there, works in the NASCAR ticket office, and my, what a busy place. For those of you that don't know, I suppose everybody does, they used to have part of the Daytona Beach races right on the beach, actually. I've only seen pictures of that. I think we're going to stop for a break right now, and we'll be right back. Don't go away. We've got a lot of really interesting things coming up, and I hope you'll help make this show interesting as well. I do value your input into the show considerably, and give us a call at 866-546-5254. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Uh-huh.
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
Hello, this is George W. Bush. Tomorrow is election day, and I am calling to ask for your vote.
It's breeding, misleading, and killing. It's breeding, misleading, and killing. It's breeding, misleading, and killing. The greed, it's breeding, misleading, and killing. The people who's dying, their children are crying. The death toll still rising. Our leader is smiling. It's not his children or loved ones dying.
There's profit and fighting and money and lying. The church is believing the crazy for buying.
The drama he's selling serves to degrade us.
If we're now a target, it's just cause he made us.
I try to hold on, but I gotta let go. Don't wanna be part of this messed up show where the lies were shown. I played it in gold, and the God we trust.
Children are crying, the death toll still rising. Our leader is smiling, it's not his children or loved ones dying.
Every victim must be heard, every number has a name. This is for the people who no longer have a say. If you're leading us to righteousness, it's such a great decision. Let me ask you just one thing, why don't you send your kids in?
Don't try to play the hero in your manufactured war.
As you manipulate the system just to settle daddy's score.
Are the faces of the fallen ever haunting you at night?
Screaming, why aren't you here with us?
Cause he's too afraid to fight.
I try to hold on, but I gotta let go. Don't wanna be part of this messed up show.
Where your pockets are filled as the lives are lost.
Well, it's worth it just to humble you.
Whatever the cost.
Thank you.
In the heart of this great city, we saw tragedy arrive on a quiet morning. September the 11th. September the 11th. September the 11th.
September 11th. September 11th. September 11th.
September 11th.
September 11th. September 11th.
September 11th. September 11th.
September 11th. September 11th.
September 11th. September 11th. September 11th. September 11th.
September 11th. September 11th. September 11th.
September 11th. September 11th.
September 11th.
September 11th.
September 11th. 2001.
Saddam Hussein.
Saddam Hussein.
Saddam Hussein.
Saddam Hussein.
Saddam Hussein.
Saddam. Saddam. Saddam.
Saddam.
Saddam. Saddam.
Saddam. Saddam.
Saddam. Saddam.
Saddam. Saddam.
Saddam Hussein.
War and danger.
Continuing danger.
Hour of danger.
Very, very dangerous world.
A grave new threat.
Horrific acts of atrocities.
Murderous regimes
dedicating to killing us.
Tyranny and terror.
Slaughtered thousands.
Weapons of mass destruction.
Weapons of mass destruction.
Weapons programs.
The deadliest of weapons.
Terrible weapons.
Nuclear weapons.
Nuclear weapons.
Poison gas.
Torture chambers.
Mass graves.
Deadly technologies.
Radical ideology of hate.
Terror of threats.
Terror.
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 War on terrorism.
War against terrorism.
Global war on terror.
Global terrorism.
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 The evil terrorists.
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 Run for your lives, everybody. Run for your lives. Fear. Be afraid. Be very, very afraid. I might add that, first of all, you ought to be afraid of your very own government right now before you're afraid of any terrorists. You understand what I'm talking about? I am far more afraid of George Bush and his minions than I am Osama bin Laden and his folks. Does that sound radical? It's true. Glad to have all of you back. You can give us a call, you know, here at 866-546-5254. You are listening to the Guy James Show on the Head On Radio Network, and we're ever so glad to have you along with us this afternoon. Let's go to the phone over here to line 3. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hi, Guy. This is Juanita.
Hello, Juanita.
I couldn't hear anything while I was on hold, so I don't know if you know this. Did you know about the small aircraft flying into a building in New York City?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, it's some kind of condominium. It looks like it's up. It's a real tall building. It looks like it's up maybe 4 or 5 stories.
Hmm.
And burned. You know, had a smoking now. It was a lot of fire. But it's 72nd Street and something else in downtown New York City.
You
kind of know where that is.
One of the big skyscrapers.
It said it was a condominium.
Hmm.
I don't know if it's a skyscraper. It looks like it might be like 10, or I guess it used to have been a skyscraper, but
well,
you tell the name of it. But
yeah, you get buildings like Trump Tower is nothing but a big condo building, apartment building is what it is. So there's some towers there that no, I didn't see that yet. We don't.
I think it's breaking news. You know, I was somebody on the chat room that I was on that I don't really. They said something about it, so I think it just happened.
Well, I'll have to check that out. Someone get the skinny to us about the whole thing.
Yeah, kind of made me forget why I called.
well, thanks for letting us know that, and we'll check it out.
It says all indications are that the crash is an accident. I'm reading this stuff.
Oh,
it does look kind of tall when you see it from this view. But anyway, I did see it. They gave the name of the condominium, but I forgot what it was. But it was a condominium. I noticed that.
All righty.
And President has been notified of crash, and I think he's reading the goat, little goat, to somebody.
No doubt. He's always he carries that in his hip pocket. You got a paperback edition.
Okay. Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Juanita. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
No, I didn't know that. in our old studio when we were on terrestrial, we did have a TV in there. I haven't put one in this studio because, frankly, I probably should. I probably should do that. But I depend on you folks to keep me up to the latest. If anything real serious happens, why, we can usually catch it here on one of the chat rooms or by email or something. That's one good thing about that. But I'm a busy guy. I don't sound like I'm busy here in the studio, I'll bet you. I bet you I don't sound busy at all. I'm just sitting here with a microphone in front of me and not doing anything. But I'm as busy as they always used to say, as a one-armed paper hanger in here. So 866-546-50, and my apologies to all one-armed paper hangers. 866-546-5254. Yeah, I got into one of these conversations again earlier about values again and about the fundies talking about, well, they didn't hold this against the Republican Party, this Foley thing, because after all, that's just one man and their values are still the Republican values. They coincide with the fundamentalist right Christians, and they will actually, this has reaffirmed their faith in the Republican Party. And I look into those hollow, empty eyes and think, what the hell is wrong with you? How could you possibly come up with that? How could you? They coincide with your fundamentalist Christian beliefs. You don't believe in immorality in any church. No church believes in immorality, do they? No. Everything should be formed in moral terms one way or another. And, you know, it's immoral when we let children go without health care. Is that a Republican value? It's immoral when we make old people choose between buying medicine and buying their food. Is that a Republican value? You know, I happen to think it's immoral when we make store clerks work at a poverty level. Poverty wages without benefits or job security so that we can save a dime on a bottle of shampoo or something in a goddamn Walmart. Is that immoral? You're damn right it is. Does that coincide with your fundamentalist Christian values? I hate that when they say that to me. I hate it. It's immoral that we're unraveling the safety net. We're bankrupting the treasury. We're poisoning this land. And we're sticking our grandchildren with the bill and the job of cleaning up our mess just so that the already obscenely rich people can pocket another few million bucks. That's immoral. Don't you talk to me about homosexuality, gay marriage, abortion. Don't you talk to me about immorality. Don't you dare talk to me about immorality. It makes me sick when I get that speech from those people. I can't take it. I want to pull my hair out when they start in on that. All the issues that I just mentioned are completely immoral for those people to obscure and to just push to the side and not do anything about. That's as immoral as you can possibly be. You can't get any more immoral than letting children go without health care. Or making the old people choose between buying their food and their life-saving medicine. You cannot get any more immoral than that. And you do it willingly. Damn it. You know, you think of all the things in this country, it's immoral that we're letting our roads crumble, our bridges rust, and our dams and our levees crack and leak and break down in New Orleans. Our schools are falling apart. The entire infrastructure's... just so George Bush and Dick Cheney's billionaire pals can buy another or a bigger yacht. That is immoral. And I'll tell you what's the most immoral thing of all right now. And when you preach that immoral crap to me, I'm going to throw this back in your face every time. And I do. It's immoral that we're sending the sons and daughters of the poor and the lower middle class of the small rural towns and the wounded inner cities to fight and die in a war to save George Bush's ego. It doesn't get any more immoral than that. You want to talk about sin and immorality? There's a first-class example of it, and you're behind it all the way, aren't you? Give me that... I'm a good Christian, and I believe in George Bush, a good Christian man. Crap, don't you give that to me. I do not want to hear that. makes me want to throw up every time I hear it from them. Speaking of throwing up, I see the Republicans are ready to write off Rick Santorum. In an unusual move, the Republican National Committee is investing heavily in television advertisers in Senate races in Ohio, Tennessee, and Missouri, in what officials describe as a firewall strategy designed to limit Democratic gains in the November 7th elections and maintain the GOP majority in the Senate. The move raises questions about the priority assigned by the RNC to races in other states where Republicans are in jeopardy. Pennsylvania, Ricky Santorum. Montana, kiss that one off. And Rhode Island among them. So does that mean they've tossed in the towel on those? You betcha. That gives you an idea of just how hopeless the Republican National Committee views the Senate campaign of incumbent Rick Santorum. You think about that. They're not putting a dime into the war chest of the number three Republican in the Senate. How do you feel about that, Rick? Huh? You've kissed George Bush's ass ever since he's been in there. Why, you've been on your knees for George Bush every single day since you've been in the Senate, Rick Santorum. You've backed every filthy, rotten move that George Bush has made. Everything. You've backed it all. You voted with him, 97% of the time? Can you be any more of a hardcore right-winger loyalist than that? Can you be any more of a rubber stamper than that? And you know what, Rick? They've cut bait, buddy. They've cut off your lifeline. They've cut off your money. You're gone. You don't exist as far as the Republican National Committee is concerned. And as far as George Bush is concerned, all you ever were to him, Mr. Santorum, was a vote. That's all you ever were. Do you think this good Christian man, George Bush, gives a rat's ass about you personally? I think you're finding out now. Oh, yes, you're finding out now. You've been cut adrift to fend for yourself. The RNC is not going to help you. No. Well, I think that's very interesting. I also think it's very telling. I don't want to come out and say it yet, but, and as they say, another 4 weeks or so can be a lifetime in politics. A lot of things can happen. But I think we all know, if the election were held today, happy days would be here again, to quote an old song that I know and love. And looking at a few miscellaneous things here, I see that Republican Duncan Hunter, 52nd District in California, pulled off a real shady real estate deal and is being investigated. Another one. Oh, yeah. The San Diego Union Tribune has a story about Representative Duncan Hunter, Republican California 52nd District, and an apparently shady real estate deal. Hunter bought a house from the United States government's Resolution Trust Corporation for less than half its value, $175,000. The house was 6,200 square feet. Jeez, 6,200 square feet. I'm telling you what, 6,200 square foot house around here is $1 million. I don't care how you cut it. $175,000 he got it for. He got two bedrooms, 2.5 baths on 2.7 acres. The same month, a five bedroom, five bath home on 2.9 acres nearby sold for $495,000, and a four bedroom home on 1.2 acres sold for $359,000. The Resolution Trust Corporation, the RTC, sold the house for the same price the government liquidated the foreclosed house at auction. The house went into escrow 27 days after being listed. And Mr. Ron Hard, who specializes in foreclosures, said the man had his ducks in a row, referring to Hunter's financing being all lined up and the quick sale. Furthermore, the tax rolls listed the house at only 2,946 square feet when it was actually 6,200 square feet, plus a 2,000-square-foot guest house, pool, and tennis court that hid the real value of the house and also greatly reduced the annual property taxes. Oh, now here, this is interesting. Duncan Hunter is a close friend of disgraced former Congressman Randy Duke Cunningham, now in prison. Hmm. And there's a little investigation going on about this. So, interesting. Very interesting. And I also find it interesting, extremely interesting, that another scandal is brewing in Washington. So what else is new? McCain cancels an appearance with Congressman with Senator Reynolds, Congressman Reynolds. McCain doesn't want to get any dirt on him off of Reynolds. And so who does Reynolds bring in? He brings in Karl Rove. You go from one con man to another, you know? Makes you wonder, how far down can these Republicans go right now? How far do they have to go to escape any taint on them, any stink on them? How far do they have to go? You know, it's beginning to look like Duke Cunningham might have been the honest one in the bunch. What do you think? As more details emerge about the Mark Foley scandal, Republican politicians are running from the House Republican leaders who tried to cover it up. We found out that the Buffalo News report that Arizona Senator John McCain caved to pressure and canceled two, you're going to love this, canceled two Buffalo fundraisers with New York Republican Congressman Tom Reynolds. Senator McCain's office cited scheduling conflicts. Though his spokesman couldn't exactly say what the events conflicted with, saying, saying we haven't figured that out yet. In other words, Reynolds, go away, stay away, we don't want to go near you. And so Reynolds was quick to replace McCain with another high-profile Washington Republican who knows how to cover up scandals very well. Deputy White House Chief of Staff Karl Rove is going to sit in for McCain. And isn't that odd? Because Carl's got another nice little scandal brewing in his office right now. They got rid of his aide over the weekend, who's into the Jack Abramoff thing up to her neck, and so is Rove. And so is Rove. What was it, 485 contacts that Abramoff had with the White House, and no one there claims to know him? Oh, my. Lots of people canceling fundraising events with Reynolds. Lots of them. He's radioactive, folks. Radioactive. 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. A while back, I spoke of how during the Cold War, Republicans claimed credibility as the War National Security Party when it was three Democratic presidents who'd led the nation through World War I and World War II. And in a nutshell, it was through a campaign of hysterical charges and bald-faced lies. And when you look back through your history, and Republicans don't like you to do this, in the 1930s, it was the American right, not the left, the right, who thought Hitler was an okay guy and could be appeased into leaving us alone. And before World War II, conservatives were the staunch isolationists. Oh, yes, they were. They opposed any move that Franklin Roosevelt wanted to make to send aid to Europe. If the conservative Republicans during the Second World War would have had their way, Europe would be flying one great big damn Nazi flag right now if it had been up to the Republicans. And I found this piece from an article called Stabbed in the Back by Kevin Baker in the June issue of Harper's Magazine, which you all ought to read. In the years immediately, and I quote, in the years immediately following World War II, the American right was facing oblivion. Domestically, the reforms of the New Deal had been largely embraced by the American people. The Truman and Roosevelt administrations, supported by many liberal Republicans, had led the nation successfully through the worst war in human history, and we had emerged as the most powerful nation on earth. Franklin Roosevelt and his fellow liberal internationalists had sounded the first alarms about Hitler, but conservatives had stubbornly, even suicidally, maintained their isolationism right into the post-war era. Senator Robert Taft, who was known as Mr. Republican in those days, and the right's enduring presidential hope at the time, had not only been a prominent member of the leading isolationist organization, America First, and opposed the nation's first peacetime draft in 1940, but he also appeared to be as naive about the Soviet Union as he had been about the Axis powers. And like a lot of people on the right, he was much more concerned about Chiang Kai-shek's actually worm-eaten nationalist regime in China than the U.S. allies in Europe. The whole Atlantic Pact, certainly the arming of Germany, is an incentive for Russia to end the war before the army is built up, Taft warned. He was against any U.S. military presence in Europe, even in 1951. In that whole article, Baker explained that whole sorry episode very nicely. Briefly, in the late 1940s, the former appeasers of Hitler got all worked up over the Soviet takeover of Eastern Europe and Mao Zedong's takeover of China. And one of the catchphrases of the day was, "Who lost China?" And if China had ever been ours to lose. And right-wingers were convinced these things wouldn't have happened except for liberal traitors in the government who either allowed them to happen or arranged for them to happen. That's when Joe McCarthy took over at the time. And it turned into a great big ugly, ugly, ugly mess. And I bring all this up because it makes me wonder if we're just replaying old tapes right now. If we're just playing old tapes of the old-time Republican conservatives. Because during the Clinton administration, Republicans in Congress actually downplayed the threat of terrorism. They don't want to admit that now, but they were. They thought Clinton was crazy as he urged more aggressive counterterrorism measures. And to the extent that Republicans spoke about Clinton's anti-terrorism efforts at all, it was to criticize him for being too militaristic and just unnecessary. They said that constantly, and particularly during his second term, Clinton urged Congress to become more proactive about terrorism. And with a small handful of exceptions, Republicans in Congress, they actually ignored the warnings. They don't want to admit it now, but they did. And during his first presidential campaign, George W. Bush ignored terrorism as an issue, even though he offered other specific criticisms of Clinton's policies. And get this. The 2000 Republican Party platform contains 13 specific criticisms of the Clinton administration's foreign and military policies. Not a single one of them mentions or refers in any way to Al-Qaeda or terrorism generally. And after that, there's an entire section of their platform entitled The Middle East and Persian Gulf that deals extensively with Iraq and the alleged threat posed by Saddam Hussein, but it does not say a word, not a single solitary word about Islamic extremism, Al-Qaeda, or Osama bin Laden. Even the section of their platform entitled Terrorism, International Crime and Cyber Threats makes not one reference to Osama bin Laden, Al-Qaeda, or Islamic extremism. It doesn't contain a single claim that the Clinton administration was insufficiently aggressive toward Islamic terrorists, nor does it advocate increased militarism in the Middle East or against terrorists. Nothing. In fact, to the extent Republicans advocated a new approach at all, it was to emphasize the needs for the very law enforcement and domestic preparedness approaches which they now claim to hate. Which is it, guys? You know, during his debates with Vice President Gore, and I know you all remember this, George Bush was asked to explain his views about the Middle East. He said not one word about Islamic terrorism. He did say things like, "I'm worried about overcommitting our military around the world. I want to be judicious in its use. It needs to be in our vital interests. The mission needs to be clear. And the exit strategy obvious." That's a quote from George Bush. And also he said, "And so I don't think our troops ought to be used for what's called nation building. I think our troops ought to be used to fight and win war." And his good little pal, Condi Rice, who is the most failed Secretary of State in our nation's history, without question, showed no interest whatsoever in al-Qaeda or bin Laden. And when George W. Bush became president, one of his first acts was to absolutely kneecap the Hart-Rudman Commission recommendations, then before Congress, and assign the task of forming national security policies to Dick Cheney, who, by the way, as of September 11th, had not even made a start, hadn't had a single goddamn meeting. And in spite of the warnings of outgoing Clinton officials that al-Qaeda was a terrible threat, on April 20th, 2001, the Bush administration's first annual terrorism report left out completely no mention of Osama bin Laden. He'd been warned by the Bush administration over and over and over again. Not one mention in it in his first annual terrorism report. Bin Laden had been discussed extensively in Clinton-era reports. A senior State Department official told CNN the Clinton administration had made a mistake by focusing so much on bin Laden and personalizing terrorism. The Bush administration planned to focus on governments that sponsored terrorism, not on stateless terrorist organizations like al-Qaeda. What a horrible mistake that was. And, of course, through the summer of 2001, the Bush White House ignored warning after warning after warning that bin Laden was determined to strike in the United States. Yet no sooner had the dust settled at ground zero that the Republicans declared themselves to be the all-high God-appointed national security honchos. Righty-fingered pointed at Bill Clinton, and Junior Bush persuaded the American people that he and he alone could protect us from terrorism. How did that get turned around like that? How did it happen? I don't know. It's an ugly mess. But I think the American people are at least starting to get wise and understand that this grand old pervert party is not the political party that's going to protect them. It's not the group that's going to keep them away from all harm from now on, like the Republicans have been fooling them into thinking for so long now. They've demonized the Democrats as cut-and-runners, as cowards, as un-American. All of that they've used, and I think it's worn thin. And I don't believe the public's buying it anymore at all. I don't think they've bought it whatsoever anymore. And I think in just a few weeks, we're going to find out that the American public, well, we're going to let them know. We're going to let them know that we're not buying it anymore. It's that simple. And I look forward to that day, and I know you do as well. If we can at least neutralize the Bush administration the rest of the way through his term and keep him from doing any more harm, that'll be a good thing. If we could get him completely out of office, impeach him, that would be a great thing. That would be a very great thing. And I don't think it's beyond the realm of possibility to do that. Who knows? A lot of Democrats might grow a spine between now and the end of the year. I certainly hope so, and decide that it's time to put Bush's neck on the chopping block as a president, and he needs to go. He's done enough damage, and I think America knows he's done a tremendous amount of damage. Hell, the whole world knows about it. We can hope anyway. I think the House is looking pretty good right now. The Senate, I don't know. I think it's a toss-up. Could go either way. A lot depends on what happens in these last very few weeks here. So it could go either way. I just hope that damn Joe Lieberman doesn't pay a big voice in somewhere. Our luck, it'd end up a tie, and he'd end up voting with the Republicans most of the time. It's wouldn't surprise me at all. Hey, we're going to pause for news at the top of the hour. You're listening to the Guy James Show on the Head On Radio Network. Don't you go anywhere. We'll be back right after the news.
This is the Quality News Network. As the result of North Korea's nuclear weapons test this week, Japan's parliament has voted to impose its own sanctions on North Korea. It's banning all ships as well as exports to and imports from North Korea. Japan is also refusing entry to North Korean nationals. Meanwhile, the UN Security Council continues to consider international sanctions. And while President Bush says he's committed to diplomacy and is ruling out a military response, he adds that the U.S. reserves all options to defend U.S. allies in the region. A new study estimates that more than 650,000 Iraqis have died since the war began 3.5 years ago, a number about 20 times higher than previous estimates by the U.S. government. But this study, a statistical prediction by the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Health, is based on interviews and death certificates rather than official body counts and media reports. President Bush is dismissing the report as not being credible. The Iraqi ministry confirms that more than 2,600 Iraqis were killed in the city of Baghdad in September. That's a 15% increase from August. And the country's immigration minister says more than 300,000 Iraqis have been displaced since the U.S. invasion, and nearly 900,000 have moved to Jordan, Iran, and Syria. In Afghanistan, a prediction from the Army Chief of Staff, General Peter Schumacher, that U.S. troops will remain at their current levels in that country through the year 2010. For the first time in 50 years, the U.S. government is considering charging one of its citizens with treason. The case involves a California-born convert to Islam who has appeared in Al-Qaeda videos. However, the 28-year-old man remains overseas and is not in U.S. custody. The House Ethics Committee, now investigating the Mark Foley case, plans to interview former Foley Chief of Staff Kirk Fordham tomorrow. Fordham claims to have notified Speaker Dennis Hastert's top aide several years ago about Foley's inappropriate conduct with congressional pages. One of those pages talked with the FBI yesterday. A collision between a passenger and a freight train, passenger train and a freight train in northeastern France today has left as many as 10 people dead and dozens injured. The man who murdered John Lennon 26 years ago has been denied parole for the fourth time. Mark Chapman is serving a life sentence at New York's Attica State Prison. In Thailand, forecasters predict that rain-caused flooding that has already killed 39 people is expected to worsen. 17 provinces, including Bangkok, remain flooded today. And the federal government says it's cracking down on people who violate the U.S. trade embargo with Cuba, an embargo which has been in place for decades. This is the Quality News at Network, science and business news coming up.
Divorce is never a pleasant experience, but it doesn't have to be a tragedy. If you can rein in the emotions, step back from the anger and victimhood, you can end your marriage with dignity instead of hostility. You married with the best of intentions. Now you need to untie the marital knot with the same mutual respect. Choose collaboration instead of confrontation. Stop wasting money on lawyers. Don't drag this out for 5 years. A collaborative divorce is better for the children, family, and friends. Collaboration costs a fraction of a contended divorce and can be done within weeks rather than the months or years. An award-winning documentary called Divorce Collaborative Style explains how you can end your marriage fairly and efficiently. For less than what a lawyer charges to answer one simple question, you can get all the answers from Divorce Collaborative Style. Go to collaborativedivorce.tv and order your DVD today. If it's over, end it right. collaborativedivorce.tv.
The federal deficit has fallen to its lowest level in 4 years, but is still $250 billion. AT&T's $78.5 billion merger with Bell South has been approved by the Justice Department, clearing the way for a decision by the FCC, possibly tomorrow. Security software firm McAfee says its chairman and CEO is resigning following an internal investigation into the company's stock option practices. OPEC's chief says the cartel has decided to cut oil production by 1 million barrels a day starting next month in order to raise prices. A new report from the EPA charges ASARCO, one of the world's largest copper producers, with burning hazardous waste when it was telling the government it was recycling metals. The company declared bankruptcy last year and faces billions of dollars in fines, the result of local, state, and federal charges in 21 states. Bank of America says it'll soon be offering a free online equity banking for those who maintain B of A bank account balances of at least $25,000. And Genentech reports a 58% hike in third quarter profits, $568 million. Light sweet crude oil is trading this hour at $58.20. That's down 32 cents a barrel. On Wall Street, the markets are all down slightly. The Dow's down to 2 points at 11,843. NASDAQ is down 4 at 2,311. The S&P 500 down 4 at 1,349. More at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Diana Walter. It's now 5 past the hour.
what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show. The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Well, hello again. Glad to have you back. Second hour of the Guy James Show here today. It's going to be the middle hour today, because we're going to be with you right up until 6 p.m. this evening. That's right, be with you until 6 this evening instead of 5. So we're going to get a little hungry. We usually eat dinner around 5 o'clock. I guess we can survive an extra hour. And then Bob Kincaid's going to join you from 6 until 10 tonight. So Bob gets the long shift, and we're both filling in for Bruce a little bit here for a couple of days while he takes a little bit of time off, much needed. So that's what it'll be. You've got two more hours on this show. I do hope you'll give us a call at 866-546-5254. Want to let you know that coming up in about 10, 15 minutes, we're going to have Bruce Cummings. He's a specialist on Asia, especially Korea. He's written several books about North Korea and has a lot to say about that situation over there right now. What do you think? The Bush people trying to scare everybody to death and use it as a campaign tactic again? Seems that way to me. Oh my God, oh my God, they've got nukes, look out. But don't worry, we'll protect you. Don't worry. The Republicans will protect you. I, George Bush. And by the way, be sure and elect all my rubber stampers in Congress, because they'll help protect you as well. I need them. I need them on my side and on your side to protect you from these Koreans who now have these nukes. And they're going to sell them to every terrorist organization in the world, and we'll just be like, oh my God, we're all going to have to be up all night worrying from now until the end of time. Fear. Fear-mongering. That's exactly what it's called, and that's exactly what it is. And you know they love to go back and they love to blame this on George W. Bush. I mean, on Bill Clinton, rather. Everything is Bill Clinton's fault. Sooner or later, when it all boils down to the bottom of the pot, it's always the cleanest's fault. It's always Bill Clinton's fault, no matter what it is. You know, we have always heard this about how the Clintons sold missile technology, like Bill Clinton himself did it. He went over there with his briefcase and showed him the latest models and signed the contracts and did it himself. Did you know that Donald Rumsfeld sat on the board of directors of the company that sold reactors, nuclear reactors, to North Korea? Donald Rumsfeld. Amazing how these same names keep turning up time after time after time. We have Cheney with the Halliburton Group, and we have Donald Rumsfeld sitting on the board of a company which 6 years ago sold two light water reactors to North Korea. Rumsfeld was a non-executive director of ABB, a European engineering giant based in Zurich. How's a guy like Donald Rumsfeld end up on the board of directors of a country based in Zurich? Anyway, it won a $200 million contract to provide the design and key components for the nuclear reactors for the North Koreans. The current defense secretary sat on the board from 1990 to 2001, earning $190,000 a year to sit on that board. $190,000 a year to sit on this board. This is from a Republican son of a bitch that doesn't want to whole group of Republican sons of bitches that don't want to raise the minimum wage. Anyway, he got $190,000 a year for sitting on the board of directors of that company for meeting, what, once, twice, three times a year, whatever it was? Conservatives now fault President Clinton for selling the light water reactors to North Clinton under the previously agreed framework. But not very many of them want you to know Rumsfeld's role in the deal.
Rumsfeld has never acknowledged that he knew the company was competing for the nuclear contract. And in response to questions about his role and the reactor deal, the defense secretary's former spokeswoman, Victoria Clark, told Newsweek back in February of 2003 that there was no vote on this, and that her boss does not recall it being brought before the board at any time. However, the ABB company spokesman, Bjorn Edlund, told Fortune magazine at the time that board members were informed about this project, and one former director who sat with Rumsfeld on the board said they were told about the contract. This was a major thing for ABB, the former director said, and extensive political lobbying was done. The director recalled being told that Rumsfeld was asked to lobby in Washington on ABB's behalf. A few years after participating in the deal, Rumsfeld attacked the concept of selling reactors to North Korea. In a speech at the Heritage Foundation, Rumsfeld said, "Our present nuclear agreement with North Korea unfortunately does not end its nuclear menace. It merely postpones the reckoning with no assurance that we will know how much bomb-capable material North Korea has." So there he is, involved up to his ears in helping provide them with the technology they needed. And he throws stones, and they all throw stones at Bill Clinton. Go figure. I'm amazed on how they do that. And did you hear O'Reilly last night trying to pull the old Saddam once Kerry to win situation again? Remember when he said Saddam, or not Saddam, but Bin Laden? Bin Laden wants Kerry to win. Bin Laden wants Kerry to win. Well, he said this last night.
Now, the reason North Korea is causing trouble is that it wants to influence the November election. As we discussed last week, Iran's doing the same thing in Iraq, ramping up the violence so Americans will turn against the Bush administration. That is not a partisan statement. It is a fact.
No, not partisan.
America's enemies
at all
are emboldened by the stalemate in Iraq and feel they can do anything they want to do. They also hate Mr. Bush and want to weaken him as much as possible.
Ah, yes. The Koreans are going to get involved in our election, and they're just like Osama did. And where does O'Reilly dream these things up? Man, does he ever. He's got a wild imagination. But Bill O'Reilly knows all, sees all, so I guess we'll have to take him at his word for that, won't we? I think I'd probably need to take time out to get a hold of our guest. And we'll be back in just a moment or two. Don't go away.
There's a hole in the world tonight. There's a cloud of fear and sorrow. There's a Don't let there be a hole.
Ah, yes. There's a hole in the world tonight. There's a big hole in the ground over in Korea right now. How's that for a segue? Welcome back, everybody. Glad to have you back with us, although I think we have information that that hole is not as big as some people are claiming that it was going to be. As promised, we have on the line with us right now Bruce Cummings. Bruce is a professor at the University of Chicago. He is a specialist on North Korea, has written several books on the North Korean situation, is probably a man that a gentleman like Mr. George Bush ought to have over there talking to the North Koreans, and we'll get his impression of that. I think we do need to talk to him. But Bruce, are you with us?
Yes.
Welcome to the Guy James Show. Glad to have you along with us. Good to have somebody that can make some sense of this North Korean situation right now. It appears, I haven't explained my politics, but I'm very definitely on the left, and I see this Korean thing playing out as another fear factor problem going on right now. And I'm wondering what your opinion is. Is this something that we need to lay awake nights sleeping, thinking about?
Well, I think Kim Jong-il handed George Bush a big pre-election gift with this test. It is going to make it easier for the Republicans to play their national security card and claim that Democrats are soft on that, as John McCain did yesterday. That's unfortunate. But I think it is a very dangerous situation because, yesterday McCain said Bill Clinton carried a small stick and gave the North Koreans a bunch of carrots. That's just really pure demagoguery because Bill Clinton came within an ace of attacking North Korea's, running a preemptive strike on North Korea's plutonium facilities back in June 1994. Jimmy Carter intervened, luckily, and got us out of that by negotiating a freeze on their whole plutonium facility that lasted for 8 years. But that indicates the great danger of the Korean Peninsula. It's always been on a kind of hair trigger, very tense situation since the end of the Korean War. There are over a million men under arms near the DMZ. It's a 24/7 high alert status, and so you can't just treat this as another of Kim Jong-il's maneuvers to call attention to himself.
Well, let's go down through this step by step. Kim Jong-il, would he really, really do this? Would he really send a nuke into Japan or into South Korea? Would he do that, in your opinion?
Well, I don't think the North Koreans are going to attack anybody. They're not suicidal. And in fact, for 15 years, they've had a real survival strategy after the Soviet Union collapsed. And they've been using their nuclear program as an essential part of that survival strategy. They gave it up, froze it for Bill Clinton in hopes of normalizing relations with the U.S. and that Clinton would get a couple of light water reactors built as part of this 1994 agreement. That didn't happen. The Clinton administration dragged its feet in normalizing with the North, and the North was very much embittered by that, but they have really for 15 years been arguing that they're willing to give up their nuclear program in return for a security guarantee from the U.S. and normalization of relations. Now, I don't find that so hard to take. I mean, to have an embassy in Pyongyang would actually give us some influence over them for once. The Bush administration doesn't want to go in that direction. Clinton was moving there, and if Gore had been elected, I think we would have gotten there. But, we're back in a real mess, and I think it just worries me what might be going through the heads of Dick Cheney and Don Rumsfeld because Seymour Hersh broke this story last spring about them planning a bombing attack on Iran to knock out their nuclear facilities, and I'm sure they're thinking about the same thing in regard to North Korea. The difference is that we've been at war with North Korea since 1950, and North Korea has the capability to respond. If we hit them, they will likely bomb Japan. I mean, we have the 3rd Marine Expeditionary Force in Okinawa, and they'll hit Okinawa with their medium-range missiles. I don't know if they have a nuclear capability for their warheads, but they have chemical weapons and all of that. So it's very, very dangerous to even think about using military force in this context, because you could get a general war in Northeast Asia that would kill millions of people.
All right, if we're in that kind of a chess match here, and if Bush decided, or should I say Cheney, decided to bomb their nuclear facilities in North Korea, and North Korea responded by hitting Okinawa or the Japanese mainland or South Korea, we're playing a chess match here. Would they do that knowing that the United States could give them utter annihilation in a matter of hours?
Well, they've been facing that situation for a long time. We installed nuclear weapons in the South in 1958 and kept them there until 1991, and we were going to use them in very early stages of a new war with the North. And the North has known this, and so their war plans call for getting as many of their soldiers across the DMZ into the South as possible. And in that way, they'd mingle, you know, with South Koreans. It would be very hard to nuke them. That's the kind of, terrible situation they've been facing, and I think that's probably what would happen if we attacked them. They would push hundreds of thousands of soldiers into the South. They have over 100,000 special forces, let alone a million-man army, and the peninsula would be destroyed. All kinds of people would die, but here's the real ringer. The last time this was, this war scenario was leaked to the press back in the early 1990s, the Pentagon wasn't sure that the North could be defeated. But it said in order to defeat them, it would take at least 6 months, and we'd need 500,000 American troops, just American troops, in the South. Now, Bush doesn't have two combat brigades to spare to fight the North Koreans, so this is a situation where we are really stretched very tight around the world because of the Iraq War, and I suppose that's part of the North Korean calculation. We really don't, we really can't start fighting with them when we're so bogged down in Iraq.
Well, how about the Chinese? If push comes to shove and in a massive retaliation goes back and forth from one side to the other, are the Chinese going to sit there and say and be casual observers?
Well, the Chinese are in a really difficult situation because they want to maintain ties with the North, but they are no longer an ally of the North as they were when they intervened on the North side in the Korean War. One of their spokesmen said yesterday, a reporter used the term ally and said, no, they're not our allies. But the fact is they have a defense treaty with North Korea, and they don't want South Korea to take over the North and have the peninsula unified with American troops on the peninsula. That's been their position for a very long time. In fact, Beijing, Moscow, and Seoul are all very much opposed to any use of force, and that's why the UN sanctions that will probably be decided on Monday will not carry even a hint of the use of military force, as far as that's what I would think anyway. So China's on the hot seat. I don't think that they would intervene against the United States to defend North Korea, but they would pull out all the stops to keep the United States from hitting North Korea. Let me say something about this test, because I'm not a nuclear physicist by any means, but I have followed this whole business for a long time now, and I read a great book called The Making of the Atomic Bomb, and I was amazed when the North Koreans announced that they were going to test their first bomb, because no other country has ever announced their test before they do it. You find out about it the next morning.
Yeah.
Because nobody knows for sure that it's going to work until you test it. And when they announced it in advance, I smelled the rat right away, and now it's coming out that the bomb may have been as little as 200,000 tons of TNT equivalent. In other words, much, much smaller than the 12-kiloton bomb that we dropped on Hiroshima. And, it may be there also is no nuclear radiation being detected. It may be that they got together a bunch of high-explosive conventional materials, maybe mixed it with some nuclear material and set this off. But it is not looking like your usual sort of India-Pakistan-type big bomb. These people are constantly pulling the wool over our eyes, doing things underground, pulling ruses and everything. And it may be that this wasn't really an atomic bomb.
Well, some of my sources have told me that they're in Washington have told me that they're highly suspected. They think it may well have been, like you say, a big bunch of stock of TNT. What about Kim Jong-il? Give us a true picture. You know, our government and everybody likes to paint him as some sort of a freak, a madman, somebody that wouldn't hesitate to get into an all-out war. What do you know about him?
Well, he's, first of all, not suicidal. And the North Koreans know that they can't win a new Korean war. They can't win a war attacking Japan or our troops. They will lose. But at the same time, this is a regime that, if it goes down, it will go down fighting, and it's really a regime constantly underestimated and demonized in our country. CNN never has a North Korea story without goose-stepping soldiers running through Pyongyang as if these are Nazis, when in fact, the goose-step was done by communist regimes long before Hitler came to power. It doesn't look very good, but they just run it all the time. Now, Kim Jong-il has been in the center of North Korean governing affairs since around 1970. His father brought him up through the party and through the government, and by 1980, at one of their big party congresses, they announced that he would take over after his father died, and then, lo and behold, that's exactly what happened. He doesn't look like his father. He looks like his mother. He's got, a bad hair day, 365 days a year. He wears these ridiculous 1970s pantsuits and elevator shoes. So he's very easy to caricature. But people who have actually taken the time to talk to him and meet him have been very impressed with him. North Korea is very much like South Korea in the sense that the leaders of the huge conglomerates like Hyundai or Samsung that are in South Korea, they put their sons in power, they train their sons, and they also centralize everything in their own hands. It's just that in North Korea, Kim Jong-il and Kim Il-sung did that for an entire country, an entire state. But this guy takes home a great deal of work and pours over it. There's a very good book about a woman who actually lived in his household, one of his nieces. She lives in England now. So he's funny looking, but he's a formidable leader. And behind him is just a phalanx of mostly older people who have been associated with the regime almost from its beginning. In 1998, for example, the top 40 leaders in North Korea, only one was under the age of 60, and that was Kim Jong-il himself, who is now 64. So you've got an old guard of revolutionaries who are very tough. They have driven their economy into the ground with basically policies that were designed to solve the problems of the 1930s and don't work anymore. But I never underestimate them, and there would be just hell to pay if we got into a war with them.
Are a lot of them holdovers from his father's regime?
Well, they almost all are, in the sense that people who fought with Kim Il-sung in Manchuria in the 1930s, those who survived, about 200 of them, constituted the core of the regime when it was founded in 1948, and they've put all their sons and daughters into high positions. So you have an interlocked power elite there that traces its legitimacy back to the struggle against Japan. Now, this gets really interesting in that the new prime minister in Japan, Mr. Abe, is himself a right-wing nationalist, but he's also the grandson of former Prime Minister Kishi, who was in Manchuria when Manchuria was a colony of Japan. He was an official there as a young man. That's how his career started. And that was the very regime that Kim Il-sung was fighting against in Manchuria. So these are people with very long memories, very stubborn. And I think that coming out of this test, you're probably going to see more conflict with Japan than with the United States. As far as I could tell from Bush's news conference today, he's not going to really do anything about this test. His red line seems to be if North Korea sells a bomb to somebody else, and I wouldn't blame him for that. That would be my red line, too. That would be absolutely intolerable. But North Korea is not going to do that because they know they'll be destroyed if they give plutonium to Osama bin Laden and he blows it off somewhere.
Would we be able to stop that?
I don't know that we would be able to stop it, but we would be able to trace it because their plutonium facility was under UN inspection for a very long time, and the UN inspectors sent enriched spent plutonium that needs to, you know, can be turned into weapons-grade plutonium, sent that to the Energy Department for analysis to see how much the North Koreans might have reprocessed. And that means that we have the signature for any plutonium made at that facility. But even without that, sooner or later we would trace it back to the North, and we would turn the North into a charcoal briquette. That was what Colin Powell said in 1995. It's very harsh, but that's essentially what we would do if they transferred this material to terrorists.
Well,
I would say that, you know, they've done terrorism, but never allowed anybody else to do their terrorism for them. They always have their own trained people. And by the way, they haven't done anything like that for 20 years. They've been trying to keep their nose clean as far as
Have they not sold arms to Iran, for example?
Oh, yeah, they've sold missiles to Iran, and in fact, North Korean scientists go to Iran and you know, watch the missile tests, the so-called, however you pronounce it, Shahab missile that Iran has is a North Korean missile. But we are the biggest missile salesman in the world, and North Korea is probably the best provider among people that we don't like, and it's a big earner for them when they do transfer their missiles. But that's a different story. I mean, missiles are for sale in the international market. We sell a lot of them, and it's not something that you can, you know, there's no international law against them selling missiles to Iran.
Well, I understand it, their GNP depends on selling missiles.
Well, they have made a lot of money off their missiles, a lot of foreign exchange, but they have not been selling a lot lately because we've threatened to intercept the shipments, and in fact did intercept a shipment to Yemen a few years ago under the Bush administration, but we got the Spanish to do that, and they did it, and then in the middle of doing it, the Spanish were told, oh, well, there's no law against this, so the Yemenis want these missiles, so we'll have to let the missiles proceed. But anyway, we have tried to stop it, but it isn't, you know, the Russians sell missiles too. I mean, this is not a big deal.
I didn't know that. I knew that the Spanish had intercepted that shipment. I did not know that they went ahead and got through to Yemen.
Yeah, they called the Yemeni president, and he said, "We'd like those missiles, and by the way, we paid for them."
Uh huh.
And so they left the ship.
I think our press must have dropped the ball on that. I want to get to what I consider the crux of the matter here. What is it that the Bush administration has got? Are they doing right or wrong here by not talking to these people? What good has our State Department been here the last couple of years? Is there some backdoor diplomacy that could go on here? Why this barrier that we won't talk to our enemies?
Well, the Bush administration has said, and indeed the president said again today, that the bilateral route that the Clinton people followed didn't work because the North Koreans cheated, and so we've gone the multilateral route with the six-party talks. The fact is the North Koreans did not cheat on the 1994 agreement that froze their plutonium reactor, and Bill Clinton was about to go to Pyongyang during the 2000 election after Madeleine Albright had gone there and essentially worked out a deal to buy out North Korea's medium and long-range missiles. Now, this is something everybody forgot because of the election taking 5 weeks and the Supreme Court deciding Bush would be president in December. But you can go back to the newspapers in the second, third, and third week of October 2000 and see all this stuff. I mean, the guy who runs the conglomerate that makes the missiles in North Korea and sells them, the most powerful general there, General Cho Myung-nok, he came to Washington, met Clinton in the White House, and this deal was right there waiting for Bush to sign, and the Bush people said, we're not going to sign this deal. And if you look at Madeleine Albright's memoir, she's just amazed, flabbergasted that they let this deal drop, because North Korea doesn't have any delivery capability for nuclear weapons if it doesn't have missiles. So the Clinton administration showed that through bilateral, serious, hard-nosed diplomacy, you can get both the nuclear material frozen and their missiles bought out indirectly. Bush, I mean, I you probably gathered that I didn't vote for George Bush, but I
well, you probably gathered I didn't either.
I am myself flabbergasted by the combination of incompetence and idiocy with which, I mean, we talk about that in regard to Iraq, but with North Korea, in 2002, he announced his preemptive doctrine, September, said North Korea was one of the targets, sent James Kelly to Pyongyang a few weeks later, where they accused he accused the North of having a second highly enriched uranium program, and the North said, oh yeah? Why don't you just go home? And then they broke out of the Non-Proliferation Treaty. They opened up their nuclear reactor. They got back all their fuel rod, enough to make 6 or 8 atomic bombs. And Bush exacted no penalty for this. And here it is 4 years later, and they finally test one of their weapons. So no matter what you say about the Bush administration's stance, it has achieved exactly nothing except that the framework agreement of 1994 was broken 4 years ago, and North Korea has enough plutonium for a small arsenal. So I don't see how, in any sense, this can be called a success. It's a gross failure. And the six-party talks really came into existence because Beijing wanted to find a forum in which Bush would talk to Kim Jong-il. And that's really what's going on. All the other parties, with the exception maybe of Japan, want Bush and Kim Jong-il to sit down to a negotiation. China and Russia and South Korea want us to normalize relations with North Korea, which is one of the North's fundamental demands. And so Bush has really just very badly dropped the ball on this. And, you know, now we're in a pickle that is fundamentally a pickle of his own doing.
You mean they want an actual sit-down with Bush and Kim Jong-il?
Well, eventually it might come to that because Kim Jong-il is the only guy in North Korea that can make important decisions. All the experts know that, that if you want to get something done, you have to go to the very top in North Korea. But, you know, short of that, it would be nice to have Mr. Kelly talking to his counterpart in North Korea without making a lot of threats. I've known, you know, I have friends in the State Department that are basically been there for quite a while. You know, they didn't get academic jobs and went to work in the State Department. And without naming any names, I mean, those people have been just frustrated up to their gills by an administration, this administration, that doesn't really believe in diplomacy anywhere, and particularly not with our enemies.
Well, being a Midwesterner, I've said the State Department would be could be well used for storing corn right now because they've not been allowed to do anything for quite some time now. Given the power to solve this problem, you have the power to solve this problem. What do you do?
Well, you essentially bring back the agreements that the Clinton administration made, the 1994 agreement to freeze and then dismantle, that's in the agreement, dismantle the plutonium facility. You give them aid in the form of food to feed their people, to get their missiles bought out. You normalize relations and put an embassy in Pyongyang, and you give them a security guarantee that we won't try to change their regime, topple it, or attack them. These are the things that slowly dawned on the Clinton people through a lot of trial and error in the 90s. And, you know, my friend Chalmers Johnson once said, you know, you ought to send Selig Harrison off to Pyongyang. He's another friend of mine who's very good on this issue. He could solve this problem in a week. I don't think it can be solved in a week, but we do have the formula But what really worries me now is that North Korea may have decided they're just giving up on us, and they're going to become a nuclear power, and they're going to sit there in their splendid isolation, and you know, we'll never get their weapons or their missiles bought out. But that was the scenario. But the North Koreans say they still want to normal relations with us, and they're willing to give up all their nukes. And like you, I don't understand why we don't talk directly to them. Diplomacy is not something that arose in the world because friends wanted to get together to talk. It arose because enemies found they needed to talk to each other.
Yes.
That's the whole meaning of diplomacy, is involved with estrangement and distance between enemies. So we really need a high-powered envoy to go to North Korea and talk to these folks. But I just don't think we're going to get it from this administration.
Will Kim Jong-il at some point understand that his people have to be fed?
Well, I'm sure he understood that, you know, when they were having their famine in 1996, 7, and 8. But this is a harsh regime that imposes on its own people a kind of vicious dictatorship. It is the most militarized regime on the face of the earth, and it is capable of maintaining power while imposing whatever hardship it has to or feels that it has to on its own people. Mm-hmm. Now, that's a very unfortunate situation, but it's important not to get it wrong. They're not going to collapse. They have been around for 15 years now since the Berlin Wall fell and the Soviet Union collapsed, and they are not going to collapse. They have to be dealt with as they are. That was William Perry, former defense secretary. That was his statement when he was a point man on negotiating this missile deal. He's a very experienced person, and he said we have to deal with North Korea as it is rather than as we would like it to be. And here we are 6-7 years later. The North Korean people are still suffering, although not as much. The economy has actually been growing. And we're no better off. In fact, we're worse off than when Mr. Perry made those remarks.
Well, now, one last question. You know, they're throwing around the sanction card right now, the threat we are. Will that be looked upon as an act of war by the North Koreans?
Well, it depends on what kind of sanctions. We've sanctioned the regime since 1950. I have a paper I was just reading yesterday, a very good paper. You need 50 pages to explain all the sanctions that we've slapped on North Korea over the years. But sanctions that would, say, blockade their ports, which is one idea being brooded about, that is an act of war. President Kennedy called his blockade of Cuba a quarantine, so that the Russians wouldn't see it as an act of war under international law. But North Korea uses this phrase, you know, about this would be a declaration of war, this would be an act of war. They use it to up the ante and raise the stakes, particularly for China and Russia, to ask them essentially, do you want to really go down this route? And in 1993 and 4, they pulled this out of their playbook, this stuff about sanctions being an act of war, and succeeded in intimidating the Chinese, especially so that the Chinese would not go along with sanctions, serious sanctions on the Security Council. I don't think the situation has changed. The Chinese are saying we need to get tough with North Korea, but they're saying military force is out of the question. It's unthinkable. Yeah. South Korea and the Russians are saying the same thing. So through the UN, I don't think there will be really punitive, hurtful sanctions. But after that process is over, Cheney and Rumsfeld may do the same thing they did with Iraq. They say, well, the international community had a chance and they muffed it, so now we've got to go do it ourselves. And if we blockade North Korea's ports, it will be an act of war. And, you know, how they'll respond, I don't know, but it will certainly ratchet up the tension.
Well, all I know is, you know, from a layman's point of view, we've sanctioned Cuba for 40 years or whatever. We've sanctioned Iraq for a good number of years, and the only people that ever suffered was the good people of the country and not the leadership.
I don't know any international experts who think that sanctions work. You know, I don't know where they have worked. They certainly haven't worked to change the nature of the Cuban or North Korean regime.
No, the children suffer. That's who's.
That's right.
That's who suffers.
That's exactly right.
Well, Bruce, I want to thank you so very much. I've gotten a lot of email here about you being on so far. I thank you for being on to explain this. You've got great insight into this problem. I really enjoyed your answers, and I'm sure all of us have a much better understanding of this whole problem right now, and I just hope and pray that somebody wakes up and does the right thing and can solve this thing for the best interest of everybody. Ladies and gentlemen, Bruce Cummings, thank you so much for being on the program.
Thank you very much, and I'll be thinking about you when Ohio State plays Michigan.
Well, you'll be feeling really bad. Thank you. Bye now.
Okay, thanks a lot. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, he lives in that evil town of Ann Arbor, Michigan. Yeah, that we Buckeye fans, you know, that's just an evil place. That's all there is to it. Oh, when I was a young man, do you realize we had bumper stickers printed up that said Ann Arbor is a mother? And and plastered them all over that town one night. Oh, yes. Hey, I think we better stop for a break now, before I get myself in real trouble with all my Michigan friends. And we'll be back in just a moment or two. Hey, back with you here on the Guy James Show. Glad to have all of you along with us today. Somewhat unusual day here on the Guy James Show. We're going to be around an extra hour today. Yes, we are. An extra hour. Bruce is going to be off for just a few days, and so Bob and I are kind of splitting it up. I'm going to be on from 3 to 6, and Bob Kincaid will be on from 6 to 10 here on the Head On Radio Network. So there you go. I want to tell you something. I haven't talked to Bob about this. I haven't talked to Bruce about this. I haven't talked to anybody about it. But you want liberal radio? You want liberal radio by people who are liberal and progressive? Actually are? To the bone? Here we are. The Head On Radio Network. Each and every person on this network lives it, feels it, is liberal and progressive to the very core of our existence. And no phonies, nobody pretending to be something that they're not, nobody all of a sudden changed over and became a liberal broadcaster for a bunch of money or anything like that. No, we're here because we believe in what we do. We believe in telling the truth about the current political landscape and anything else you'd like to talk about. But I am very active in Democratic politics, have been all my life. I've been an office holder. I believe to the core of my being in the tenets of the Democratic Party, what they are, what they should be, not necessarily what they are all of the time, but what they should be. The founding principles of our party. And I work toward that end and have for a long, long time, and I will continue to do that until the day I die. My beliefs are unshakable. I am the true yellow dog Democrat. With one exception, and I've told this story before, so I'll bore you with it one more time. I did vote for a Republican once. One time. I had a good friend who was running for county engineer back in Ohio, and he had to get through a primary. and I voted for him in that primary so that he could get on the ballot. Yes, to answer your question, I voted against him in the general election, but I did help him out in the primary. So that's the one time I ever voted for a Republican. So there you go. And that's the skinny on the Head On Radio Network. We're proud of what we do here. We hope to get bigger and better and grow. And we are. And, yes, someone on the chat room said, gasp, you voted for a Republican. Yes, I did that one time. I'm burying my soul. That one stinking time. It's a blight upon my record. I don't know if I'll ever forgive myself for it. Yeah, you know, it's like pitching a shutout. You just don't want to allow one stinking run. I mean, but that's what happened. Anyway, yes, we are going to be here till 6 o'clock this evening, and we hope a lot of you will join us. If you want to send over a covered dish, a good casserole or something during this last hour, go ahead. Hey, I have to tell you a story. I don't know why I think about these crazy things. Many years ago, in fact, it was 1977. We had a terrible blizzard in Ohio. And the authorities came to my home and got me during this blizzard on a big four-wheel drive Steiger tractor and drove me out to the local radio station where I worked at the time. Well, it was a true blizzard. The wind was blowing 50, 60 miles an hour, and we had a foot of snow, and it drifts, you know, drifted overpasses shut. They took me out to the radio station and dropped me off. The electric was off. I got inside the radio station. The pipes were frozen. The toilets were busted. Nothing worked. And to make a long story short, after about 12 hours, I was in there about freezing to death by myself. I was the only one there. They got the electric on. I got the station up and running and on the air. And this is like a day and a half I'm here. And there's... I melted some snow outside to have something to drink, but there was no food in the place outside of a couple of packs of crackers. And I was hungry. And I got on the air in the morning and said, man, I'll tell you what, I am, I am hungry. I am really hungry. And don't you know, within an hour's time, there must have been, 12, 14 snowmobiles show up at the door of that radio station, little country radio station, with farmers sending over food for me. And I had a whole lobby full of food all to myself, and it was good, too. Yes. Yes, indeed. That's a long time ago. That was in 1977, and it was a blizzard to remember. That's when they called out the National Guard to bring in bulldozers to clean off the roads. And living in Florida now, it's hard to even think about something like that, but it did happen, and that was one of my golden days of radio, that's for sure. Back in the old days when you had to turn on the transmitter in the morning and let it warm up for a half hour before you could even go on the air at 5 o'clock in the morning. Stories. We could sit and tell them for a while, that's for sure, and we may do that in this next hour here. I see, Sarge says, could Guy be Woody Hayes? Well, I would have been proud to be. I knew Woody Hayes personally. A lot of you don't even know who I'm talking about, but he was the late great coach of the Ohio State Buckeyes. And although Woody Hayes was known for his temper and some shenanigans and things like that, Woody Hayes is one of the greatest humanitarians I've ever known. For your information, those of you that didn't know that, I could sit and talk for the entire next hour about that very, very easily and bore most of you half to death. But I may tell a Woody Hayes story, one or two, coming up in the next hour for those of you. You don't even have to be a football fan to enjoy them. No. I don't know what we're going to do about the news at the top of the hour here. I understand that they're having, let me see here. I understand that they're having some sort of technical difficulties, and we're going to have to wing it when the exact top of the hour comes here. We'll see what happens here. We'll bring this up on the screen here and see. Yeah, they're having some kind of problems. There it is. So we'll see if they actually come on in time. Should be about 1 minute from right now, if I've got it timed just right, I think. Ah, the joys of live radio. Hey, I did enjoy that that guest, Bruce Cummings. I got to talk to him quite a little bit earlier on in the day, and it's just too damn bad that people like him aren't sent by our government over to talk to people that the Bush administration doesn't want to talk to or thinks we can't talk to. There's always a way to solve any problem. And I shouldn't say always, but most of the time there is. Most of the time, human beings can get together and work out whatever problem there may be. And doggone it, I can't help but think we couldn't work something out with the North Koreans. Something to work this problem out so it doesn't end up being a nightmare for hundreds of thousands of people. That's about what I would like to see happen. We're still trying to hook up with the news here. They ought to be on right now, but they're not so far, so I don't know what's going to happen with that. We'll hang on for a minute here and see if that thing pops up. Think it's going to play. We'll see. They did send a note saying they're having technical difficulties. Evidently, they're having a lot of technical difficulties. We'll keep it tuned in there and see if they do come up here in just a moment or so. You can give us a call, 866-546-5254. We'll be back after the news.
An act of war. On the Iraq War, President Bush reiterated that the U.S. would not leave until, quote, the job is done. In Baghdad, the Iraqi Health Ministry reports that in September, more than 2,600 Iraqis were killed in sectarian violence in the capital. A new study, which will be published in the medical journal The Lancet, estimates that 655,000 Iraqis have died because of the war. That is 10 times higher than other previous estimates. At the Pentagon, the U.S. Army plans to keep the current troop levels of 140,000 in Iraq through 2010. However, the Army Chief of Staff warned against reading too much into those planning numbers, saying it's easier to hold back forces than to deploy more units at the last minute. In Baghdad today, the Shiite-controlled parliament passed a law that would create federal regions in Iraq. but the plan would not be implemented for another 18 months. President Bush also touted the U.S. economy during his press conference. New figures indicate that the 2006 federal budget deficit is lower than was originally projected. It's now just under $248 billion. In Washington today, federal prosecutors have indicted Adam Perlman, a 28-year-old American citizen, on charges of treason and aiding terrorists. The charges stem from his appearance in five Al-Qaeda videos in which he called himself a zombie American. The Associated Press is reporting that Senate Democratic leader Harry Reid made $1.1 million on a land sale, although he didn't personally own the property for 3 years. When questioned about the deal, the AP reports Reid hung up on the reporter. With less than a month until the midterm elections, a new Associated Press poll finds that voter excitement in the U.S. is at its highest level in more than a decade. 70% of Americans say they are discussing politics with family and friends, and at work, 43% say they are talking politics. You are listening to the Quality News Network.
Most people would rather have a root canal than go to a dealer to buy a car. But you can turn dread into joy when you learn how to play the car buying game. Read the book, Right Car, Right Price, and you'll discover how the game is played and how you can win every time. Whether you're buying a car or a truck, new or used, Right Car, Right Price explains how to find and buy the vehicle best suited to your individual transportation needs. Auto Week called Right Car, Right Price the right stuff. So take the hassle out of car buying. Read Right Car, Right Price, and every time you get into your new car, you'll know you've got a great deal. Go online to rightcarrightprice.com to order your copy today. It only takes an hour to read Right Car, Right Price, and it just costs $10. We even pay the postage. So go to rightcarrightprice.com right now. It'll be one of the best decisions you ever make.
A new medical study finds that women who drink a cola a day have lower bone mineral density, which can be linked to the risk of bone fractures. Libya's 1.2 million school children will soon be receiving laptop computers, the gift of an American nonprofit group called One Laptop Per Child. Security software firm McAfee says its chairman and CEO is resigning following an internal investigation into the company's stock option practices. The CEO of CNET Networks, who was also a co-founder of the San Francisco based company, also stepped down because of stock option problems. AT&T's merger with Bell South has been approved today by the Justice Department. The FCC is expected to make its final decision on the deal tomorrow. Microsoft issued 6 security patches to fix software flaws that could allow attackers to obtain access to other people's computers. They can be downloaded for free at Microsoft's website. R.J. Reynolds will stop selling flavored cigarettes domestically. Critics say that candy fruit and sweet flavored cigarettes were marketed to young people. OPEC ministers have reportedly agreed to cut global oil production by 1 million barrels a day, but the members are still deciding on how to share the cut. Light sweet crude settled at $57.59 a barrel today, and at the close of Wall Street, the Dow Jones was down 15 points, the Nasdaq was down 7 points, and the S&P 500 was down 3 points. There's always more at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Allie Gramoff.
Can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show. The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
You betcha. Here we are, not used to being with you after 5 o'clock, but here we are today. We're covering for Bruce the rest of this week, and next I'm going to take half the shift, and Bob's going to take the other half, so I'll be with you one more hour, and Bob Kincaid, the infamous Bob McCain, Kincaid, the
Beckley, West Virginia Flash, will be with us from 6 till 10. And always, I had a chance to listen to almost all of Bob's show last night, and I did enjoy it. Bob talks about conversational radio. Well, he's darn good at it, that's for sure. And if you haven't listened to Bob's show, do so. You'll enjoy it, I guarantee you that. 866-546-5254. I hope you'll join us. By the way, somebody asked me about that opening song we use in our opening. I do love that myself. It's Mike and the Mechanics, a song called Word of Mouth. And, yes, it was late 80s. Somehow I can't get into the rap and what do they call the hip-hop and the hip-hop and the rap. I guess that dates me, doesn't it? I don't know. But anyway, I love that song. The words for it. From it are perfect for our program and perfect for the liberal cause, what I think. Glad to have you along with us this afternoon. We've got a lot that we can and will talk about this hour. As I said, we're normally not on this hour, and for all of you just joining us, Bruce will be back in just a few days. So put up with me for this hour, if you will. And by the way, speaking of telephones, let's go over to the telephone right now and see who we've got here. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hey, Guy, it's Dave in California. I don't know if you had an update on that airplane that hit the building.
No, I haven't.
Well, it was the pilot was a pitcher on the New York Yankees named Corey Ardell. I'm probably pronouncing that wrong, but he'd only recently become a pilot, and there's people that were witnesses that it was going through some pretty erratic maneuvers right in the big city, big buildings all around, and impacted into one of them. So,
wow.
Speculation as much of it is, did he die, and did that cause the crash, or did he faint, or what? You know what? Lost control of it, or was it a suicide? They don't know, but.
We had something like that happen down here in Florida a couple of years ago, up in Tampa. A lot of you probably remember seeing that. A small plane hit a high-rise building, and there it was sticking out of the side of the building. That was a wild scene. And this was a regular small aircraft, single-engine aircraft?
Yes, it was. A four-seater. It was called a Cirrus. I was planning to give you a comment on an earlier conversation that you'd had with the guest there on negotiating with North Korea.
What do you think about it? Do you think that some sort of a solution can be negotiated, Dave?
Well, I say that we were able to do it a few years back because we had a president who was well motivated. It was his intent to produce world peace, and he was a very intelligent and capable president. And presently, we have none of that going for us. Unless he has a little black box in the center of his jacket, I don't think we're going to have any kind of ability to assess a coherent conversation.
You know, Dave, you are so right. They have shown no inclination to work toward peace anywhere. All you got to do is think back to the recent conflict between Israel and Hezbollah and Lebanon. They sat by and watched that thing.
Yes, indeed.
And we've not done anything in that neck of the woods to try and help anything out there. It's just it's bad. It is.
Well, I think it's just been on the wrong side of virtually everything. A well-motivated president like Jimmy Carter, he would be able to go over and sincerely discuss the situation and arrive at a workable plan and be able to negotiate intelligently with a good purpose in mind. And that's so lacking right now.
It is. It's like they have no intention whatsoever of going over and...
I think you've essentially put the question out, tell me anything good that this president has done for the average citizen of the United States, and I can't grope to find it. I guess you can't either, and neither can any of your listeners. that just does not act in the interest of the people.
No.
Billionaires, yes. You can, if you're a billionaire, you can say, a lot of good stuff has been happening for me. But
That's exactly right. That's the only end that they've worked toward. It's confounding. It really is. And our guest in my conversation with him this morning said he just can't put his finger on it. Why they don't? But you know, we're stuck with that right now.
Keep your magnificent honesty coming our way, will you, Guy?
We will. Thank you, Dave.
Thank you, sir.
Good to hear from you. I just saw something on the chat room that is interesting to me. Somebody brought up about singing, and I guess some of you know that I am a singer. I play and sing, and kind of fond of John Denver music and that sort of thing, old folk music and that sort of thing. And someone said, well, I'm looking down here, said you should sing Almost Heaven by John Denver before the show ends. Maybe I'll do that sometime. But somebody by the name of Eileen on here says, I think Guy should sing Grandma's Featherbed. He does it well. And I went back and asked, how did you know that? Because I have sung that song many, 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 many times in public. And I'd be interested to know. And Eileen on the chat room, are you the Eileen that I know? Interesting. Little mystery to the program there today. Let's get back to the mission at hand here today. I guess you'd have to be my age, really. And fortunately, most of you are not. I guess you'd have to be my age to just understand how damn frustrating it is to listen to the Republicans and their radio mouthpieces. You know the ones, Limbaugh and Hannity and Bortz and Ingram and Savage and the rest constantly bloviate about how they're the party of security and protection of America. You hear that all the damn time. And how is it they, who are the ones who've saved us over and over again from certain annihilation by enemies throughout the world, how is it that they claim to be that? All the while the Democrats, they say, are the party of defeatism, appeasement, and weakness. We hear that from them just all the time. And I say I'm frustrated at hearing this because during the Cold War, when I was growing up, it was known and accepted that it was three Democratic presidents who led us through two great wars and build our nation into the number one military power on this earth. And it was Democratic presidents and it was Democratic Congresses that led America into the truly modern military age. That didn't, however, prevent the Republicans from always claiming that that they're the protectors. They seem to forget that way back in the 1930s, it was the Republicans who sidled up to Hitler, including Prescott Bush, by the way, and a bunch of his pals. The Republicans were spreading the notion that Hitler could most likely be persuaded to leave us alone. And lest anyone forget that before World War II, conservatives were so entrenched in isolationism that they opposed any move by Franklin Roosevelt to send aid of any kind over to Europe or to help him prepare for war. It's actually a miracle that following World War II, the Republicans were almost completely irrelevant on the American political scene. Roosevelt had implemented so many great social reforms that the American people solidly embraced. They were solidly in the Democratic corner. Conservative Republicans were on the political endangered species list. Roosevelt and Truman, along with the support of many liberal Republicans, had successfully led the United States to victory in the worst war in the history of civilization. And we'd become the most revered and respected and most powerful nation on earth through Democratic administration. And early on, Franklin Roosevelt had warned the nation and the world about Hitler, but the conservative Republicans were having none of it. And I tell you all this so that some of you will have a greater understanding about how this all came about. This is, you know, this was a war of survival for the whole world, which was being threatened by the Nazis and the Republicans. The Republicans fought tooth and nail to just ignore the whole thing. And when you look back upon that era and think what most likely would have happened had the United States not entered the war, you soon realize that Hitler could well have conquered the entire world. Had he got a hold of some more oil reserves over in Europe, he could have. He could have done it. But the conservative Republicans wanted no part of that whole deal. And even, as I mentioned earlier in the program, Senator Robert Taft, the darling of the right, who was their presidential hopeful from Cincinnati, Ohio, he led the isolationist movement and opposed the draft in 1940. And he even believed that the Soviets were not a threat and tried to convince the nation that we needed to be more concerned about Chiang Kai-shek and the nationalist China than worry about our allies in Europe. He was opposed to U.S. military presence in Europe, even as late as 1951. And the conservative Republicans were completely inept at fostering a powerful military, completely inept at that, and defending the nation. So they started their propaganda of believing that there was a commie behind every bush, thus giving rise to the likes of one Joseph McCarthy, a man they must still be so proud of even to this day. The conservative Republicans became so good at propaganda that in 1960, they actually forced the Democrats to have to prove that they were just as tough on communism as were the Republicans, when the facts prove that it had been the Democrats all along who had protected us from the so-called Red Menace. And the facts about all this are undeniable, that the Republicans really had no record of successful foreign policy and no record at all of being strong on national security. None. It's just a brief history of all that. And so now we start the whole thing all over again. Once again, it's the Republicans who are crowing about saving America from the Islamic hordes whom, in their perceived view, are ready to storm the gates. They seem to want us to forget that during the Clinton administration, the Republicans weren't concerned at all, not at all, with the threat of terrorism, even though Clinton practically begged them to get on the bandwagon against terrorist threats. And that is a fact. I don't want anybody to forget that Tom DeLay, Trent Lott, Orrin Hatch, and a host of other Republican leaders didn't take Clinton seriously at all when he urged action on terrorism. They made fun of him over it. They accused him of being too militaristic and over the top. Hardly anyone on the right, no one I can think of on the right of the aisle, spoke of terrorism in any meaningful way whatsoever. And don't forget that Mr. War on Terror himself, Junior Bush, completely ignored the issue of terrorism. The Clinton White House could see it coming, but the Republicans and Junior Bush could not have cared less, and they most certainly acted like it. Glenn Greenwald wrote this, talking about the platform of the Republicans when Junior Bush was running. They didn't mention or refer in any way to Al-Qaeda in their whole convention, and in Junior Bush's whole campaign. They never mentioned Al-Qaeda or Osama bin Laden. It was as though he did not exist. And they made fun of Bush, of Clinton rather, for being too militaristic and trying to go after the guy. And during the debates with Al Gore, and I know you remember this, many of you, Bush was asked to explain his views toward the Middle East. He said not one word about Islamic terrorism. He did, to reiterate, say things like, I'm worried about overcommitting our military around the world. I want to be judicious in his use. Like hell. Boy, he's proven that, hadn't he? Said it needs to be in our vital interest. The mission needs to be clear. And the one I'll never forget, and the exit strategy obvious. And also, he said, I don't think our troops ought to be used for what called nation building. I think our troops ought to be used to fight and win war. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Our troops had not to be used for nation building. What are we doing not once but twice right now? And our totally incompetent Secretary of State, Condi Rice, also showed no interest whatsoever in Al-Qaeda or bin Laden. And we've mentioned before, when Bush became president, one of the first things he did was almost destroy the Hart-Rudman Commission. And he did give Dick Cheney the task of setting up a task force on terrorism. And along comes 9/11. And Cheney hadn't done a damn thing about it. Nothing. Zero. Nada. In spite of the warnings of the outgoing Clinton people that Al-Qaeda was a threat. The Bush people turned the other way. If it came from Clinton, they didn't want anything to do with it. Bin Laden had been discussed over and over again in Clinton-era reports that were turned over to the Bush administration. And even senior State Department officials told CNN the Clinton administration had made a mistake by focusing so much on bin Laden. A horrible mistake. And yet, will these people admit any of this now? And yet, no sooner had the Twin Towers fallen down than the Bush neocons started crowing that they were the great protectors of America. They declared that it was Bill Clinton's fault that 9/11 happened. And Bush, in a sight that I will never forget and I will never forgive him for, stood on that pile of rubble with that bullhorn and convinced the gullible American public that he was George Patton, MacArthur, Eisenhower, and Churchill all rolled into one. And they bought it. And so this ABC 9/11 film we saw a few weeks ago was a very dangerous piece of propaganda. And once again, the American public is being fooled, being led to believe that all is well because the Republicans, led by the high and most worthy Junior Bush, will protect us. And you know what they made the Clinton administration look like in that film. Listen, I have no doubt whatsoever that the Clinton administration could have done more to combat the rising terrorism. I also have no doubt that it's absolutely silly and totally irresponsible to argue that the Republicans have a better record on national security than do the Democrats. It's absurd to even suggest that. The only way the neocon right has established any credibility with the American public as to their ability to counteract terrorism is through the likes of Hannity, the drug junkie Limbaugh, and the rest of their kind. They deal in lies, they deal in total fabrications and propaganda. And I hope like hell the American public can pick up on that pretty soon. I hope in about a month they remember all that these people have done to protect us from terrorism. I think it's just criminal what they've done in public to convince people the propaganda that they put out to do that. It's just nuts. Totally nuts. And here we've got the Christian fundies backing them all the way. All the Foley thing, it was just, it's just one of those things that we have more confidence than ever in the Republicans now because he was a sinner and he admitted his sin and the Republicans cast him out. And now we know that they truly are the party that maintains our family values and protects us from all evil. Oh, my God. How many of you have seen this new report? And I don't know what to make of it. I haven't had a chance to do a lot of research on it yet. But it just came out today in the New York Times. A highly respected group, a team of American and Iraqi public health researchers, did a lot of work on this study. And it came out in the New York Times today. That's not to say that it has to be gospel, but it's certainly something to talk about. A team of American and Iraqi public health researchers has estimated that 600,000 civilians have died in violence across Iraq since the 2003 American invasion, the highest estimate ever for the toll of the war there. That figure breaks down to about 15,000 violent deaths a month, a number that's quadruple the one for July given by Iraqi government hospitals and the morgue in Baghdad and published last month in the United Nations report in Iraq. That month was the highest for Iraqi civilian deaths since the American invasion. 600,000 people. It's not a precise count, and the people that did the research acknowledge a margin of error that could range anywhere. It could be anywhere from 426,000 to 793,000. That's where they come up with a 600. That's a median. This is from the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. This is no bunch of rum-dums here. The findings of the previous study, published in The Lancet, a British medical journal, in 2004, had been criticized as high, in part because of its relatively narrow sampling of about 1,000 families and because it carried a large margin of error. This new study is more representative, its researcher said, and the sampling is broader. It surveyed 1,849 Iraqi families in 47 different neighborhoods across Iraq and 18 different regions across Iraq. And so they say that they think this is possibly accurate. And Bush was asked about it today, so it's not true. Well, Mr. President, how many people have been killed in Iraq? Oh, I don't know, but that report's not true. He doesn't know, but that report's not true. Typical answer for him, isn't it? Let's go to the phones. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hi, Guy. This is Steady.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. Great to hear you. This would be my inaugural call with you on air. I usually catch the tail end of your show and when I'm trying to get with Bruce, but thanks for covering.
Yeah, doing a little overtime today. Boy, wait till that check comes in.
Hey, well, you guys are getting paid. That's a good step in the right direction.
You know what they say, the check's in the mail.
Okay, well, we'll attract those checks. We'll believe those checks are coming in, and the people are calling the phones, and the emails are coming in. I wanted to ask if you had seen any of the pictures that are coming in on CNN.
No, I have not.
I just saw a few, and I just want to briefly just state that they've got pictures on CNN that, the wings are outside the building directly below where the plane struck. There's, you can see from the aerial footage, that it looks like a big burn site where the wreckage, flaming wreckage, had fallen down and all the stuff is. And now CNN is reporting that they actually found the passport of the Yankees pitcher amongst the wreckage. And I just, I'm going to be real short and just present that as this story develops to say, have we heard that before somewhere?
Yeah.
And are we waiting for an October surprise still? The strategy of tension seems to be mounting as we're all expecting this, and elections are coming. And I just want to bring that CNN in, and people can tune that in and look for themselves and compare some of the stuff that being said right now to the events that we had on September 11th regarding verification immediately in flight forward and who knows. And this pilot's also from this area right around here, West Covina, I think. And I don't have all my facts straight, but I was listening on the news there, and I think the plane's registered to him. They found the passport, and he's from this area. I mean, the rowdy lives.
West Covina, California?
Yeah.
L.A. area. I have relatives that live in West Covina. Been there many times.
Yeah, well, we're...
South Hills High graduate.
Yeah, South Hills High graduate, 1990, is the New York pitcher, so...
I'll be darned. Well. That's a shame. He, 1990 grad, well, then that make him what, 18 and 18, about 35, 36 years old.
Yeah.
Somewhere in that neighborhood. Yeah. Well, doggone shame.
Guy, thanks for covering for Bruce. Hello to the chat room and Bob coming up, Agnes, all you guys at the head on. And I'm just excited about what's happening, and please just keep doing what you're doing, and we'll all believe for Bruce that everything's fine.
Hey, thanks for calling. Good to hear from you.
Thank you.
Gee whiz, another tragedy. There's every day there's something, isn't there? Hate to hear about those small plane crashes and all. Got a cousin that just bought himself a nice airplane, and ooh, I'm talking about a real nice airplane. He just bought. Yeah, it's like buying a motorcycle. Any of you folks, any of you guys, maybe gals too, you went out and bought a motorcycle when you were younger, and you bought maybe a small motorcycle because it's the first time you owned one, and you had it about 2 weeks, and you thought, nah, this isn't going to do. I got to have a bigger motorcycle. I mean, that's how that goes. That's how it is with airplanes. Had a cousin recently that bought a nice new six-passenger single-engine airplane and, you know, got his pilot's license and all that. It's a real nice plane. And he had it about a month, maybe 2 months, and he said, nah, this isn't going to do the job. So he out getting himself a nice twin-engine job and all that kind of stuff. Boy. Anyway, 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. I wonder if anybody here remembers this.
A democratic, free Iraq is in the national interests of our country. A free country in the midst of the Middle East will make America more secure. As a matter of fact, make any country more secure. And the decision I made was a tough decision. We've had discussions prior to the decision and after the decision. But the decision I made was the right one for America. And history will prove it's the right one for the world. And we will stay the course until the job is done. And the job is getting done. Iraq is more free every day. Citizens are beginning, the lives of the citizens are improving every day. And one thing is for certain, there won't be any more mass graves and torture rooms, and rape rooms.
Oh, do tell. Do tell, Mr. President. That was in January 12th of 2004 that Mr. Braggadocio there got up and said that in front of the American... Bragging, oh, I'll tell you what, if I got nothing to do with it, if I got anything to do with it, man, I'm going to show them their Iraqis that there ain't going to be no more mass graves. Well, actually, he didn't say it like that. He more or less said it like this. There won't be any more mass graves. There won't be any more rape rooms. That was on January 12, 2004. Daylight Tuesday brought the discovery of at least 86 shot or strangled men across the city, most of them with hands tied behind their backs and tortured, according to the police. They included 27 corpses in one of the first mass graves to be found in the capital since the U.S. invasion 3 years ago. That was on March 12th of this year. Remember, Mr. Bragging President said, no more mass graves, no more rape rooms, no more torture chambers. And on March 19, 2006, as the Iraqi insurgency intensified in early 2004, an elite Special Operations Forces unit converted one of Saddam Hussein's former military bases near Baghdad into a top-secret detention center. There, American soldiers made one of the former Iraqi government's torture chambers into their own interrogation cell. They named it the Black Room. No more torture chambers, rape rooms, or mass graves. And on October 8th, 2006, 3 days ago, strong anecdotal evidence gathered by organizations such as that of Yenar Mohammed and by the Iraqi Women's Network run by Hana Edwar suggests rape is also being used as a weapon in the sectarian war to humiliate families from rival communities. She went on to say, so far what we have been seeing is that what you might call collateral rape. says Besmia Katab of Iraqi Women's Network. Rape is being used in the settling of scores in the sectarian war. That comes from The Observer, October 8th, 2006. Let's hear that again.
Thank you. Yeah. A democratic free Iraq is in the national interests of our country. A free country in the midst of the Middle East will make America more secure. As a matter of fact, make any country more secure. And the decision I made was a tough decision. We've had discussions prior to the decision and after the decision. But the decision I made was the right one for America. And history will prove it's the right one for the world. And we will stay the course until the job is done. And the job is getting done. Iraq is more free every day. Citizens are beginning, that the lives of the citizens are improving every day. And one thing is for certain, there won't be any more mass graves and torture rooms and rape rooms.
Oh, really? Interesting. Very interesting. I will say this. I believe the press is finally coming around. Some of the talking heads are finally coming around. The problem is they didn't come around on their own. They're coming around because now they're realizing that the American public is coming to their senses and expects truth from them. One of them being Tweety Bird, one Mr. Chris Matthews.
That there was this real slow motion in getting this story out. The only reason they got out is the ABC broke the story. That the Republicans and leadership weren't going to break it. Mark Foley wasn't going to break it. Colby didn't break it for 6 years. Nobody was breaking it. The leadership staff didn't break it. The clerk of the House didn't break it. The head of the page board didn't break it. The campaign chairman Reynolds didn't break it. They all knew about it. And they didn't tell us about it. And now we know this stink bomb is going off on Capitol Hill, and nobody's told us about it. There's a simple message here. And Karl Rove knows this better than anybody else. This is an engulfing story. It's not like one vote on your list of things you care about. When you think of the Capitol right now, and we're looking at it, you think about the stink in that place right now, and you want to fumigate it.
And what do you
think it's almost
leader?
As big? Not almost as big.
Chris, what does it mean for Hastert? What does it mean
for
the leader?
Well, it doesn't really matter. You haven't given 5 minutes thought to Hastert 10 days ago. You probably won't do it again in 2 months. It doesn't matter. I don't think about Hastert. It's about the Republican coalition with the evangelicals and the sense you have of that party. Newsweek reports this weekend the Democratic Party is now trusted more on moral values than the Republican Party. The Republican Party, which has run on that issue for years, ever since Reagan, they're trusted more on national security because it all is one big thing. People say, I don't trust the people in that building running it now if they're the ones that covered up for Mark Foley and his stuff. And I think it's going to be a long time for that. I think the Republican Party is going to make a decision. Are they going to be secular and open to things like the gay lifestyle? Or are they going to play the game of people like Tony Perkins on the right and say, no, we don't like gays even in our party? This is really going to get to that point, I think. Rightly or wrongly, there's going to be a big cultural clash on this question. It's not just about Denny Hastert, who's probably finished by the end of the year anyway. And what about Boehner, the number two guy? He's pointing the finger at Hastert. Reynolds is pointing the finger at Hastert. The Republican leadership are fighting with each other over who's to blame. You ask me, do people think Hastert covered up? Boehner does. Reynolds does. The top leadership do.
And now the question is, we'll see what Colby, you know, because
I've known Colby. A member of Congress. He's a quiet guy. He's a sort of a button-down, regular guy. He's an openly gay guy. You know, he's gotten involved in this and just because he happened to have heard about this thing. I don't know what he'll say now. I think he's a very intelligent guy. It'll be interesting to see what he has to say.
Absolutely.
In the days ahead, what Jim Colby himself has to say. Because he's leaving the House. He can speak pretty openly about this matter and how it wasn't handled right.
Yeah, it'll be fascinating, Chris, to see if Colby says, look, I told Hastert or someone in Hastert's office back in 2000. We don't know that yet, but it'll be fascinating.
Well, the staffers, I don't know. I was once a staffer for the Speaker of the House, and I don't think we ever kept a secret from the boss. Our job was to tell the boss what he didn't know about, mm-hmm. not to keep stuff from him. There must be a pretty good reason why Scott Palmer and those other two kept this from Denny Hastert if they did keep it from him. And we're not going to find it out until people are under oath.
Yeah, it's going to be.
Maybe not even then, by the way.
And like you point out, Colby's leaving, so maybe we'll hear some stuff from him soon.
I think we might hear something down the road from Mark Foley, too, which will be fascinating. Like who assaulted him when he was a young boy? And what was that all about? And how did that lead to his condition and his sort of frame of reference now sexually? And I think there's a lot of stories. This story, as I said before, has more legs than a centipede. It's going to just keep going and going way past the election.
Let me ask you something. So would you have heard Rita and Chris talking about this, say, 6 months ago? I don't think so. My point here is that the press, finally knowing how the polls look, many of them are starting to turn around. You start to hear, have you seen Joe Scarborough? Why, Joe Scarborough actually comes out and tells a little truth on his program now. He's actually down on this administration. He's down on Hastert. He's down on all these people. They see the polls. They know where their money comes from. So they want to get on the popular side of the issue. And so now they're all piling on. Many of them, anyway. Your Limbaughs and Hannitys and those people will never, never do so. Never. That I can see, anyway. But, you know, here we are, and we'll probably have a chance to talk a little bit before the program's over about this Foley Gate or Hastert Gate or whatever you want to talk about, whatever you want to call it. But, you know, I think we face a paradox in Iraq. The longer we stay, the stronger our enemies become. And we can't defeat either the insurgency or the civil war resulting from our invasion and occupation. In fact, both of them have grown a lot stronger. Nor can we protect the Iraqis that we supposedly came to save. We've got a corrupt Iraqi government who we helped put in. That are wasting the billions of dollars that we've given them for rebuilding while the middle class flees to avoid the danger. We have the Pentagon training Iraqis to fight, but we may as well be training the army of our future enemies, because that's exactly what's happening. We could have been spared this whole debacle had our government, this inept, incompetent government, had they consulted some history books. The historic origins of Iraq. If they'd only looked, if I can do it, you can do it. Why couldn't they have done it? Why didn't they have anybody in the State Department or any place that knew the history of this area? They go there in search of empire and oil. England went there in search of empire and oil many years ago. Hell, England formed Iraq from some of the provinces of the defeated Ottoman Empire after World War I. But British officials went in there, just like we did, and they ignored the ethnic and the religious differences dividing its people, just as did our own neoconservatives who promoted our invasion of Iraq. Winston Churchill, who was then head of, I forget what office they called it, the British Colonial Office, I think it was called. They believed Iraqis would greet the British as liberators. Does that sound familiar? But when he tried to build a unified Iraq, you know, all the experts of the time warned Churchill that the Iraqis would resist any occupation by any so-called Christian infidels who threatened their traditions and their values. And like the Bush administration, Churchill ignored the advice. And instead, he picked the Sunni, I can't think of his first name, Faisal Hussein, who was king of Syria and a supporter of the British, to be Iraq's constitutional monarch. And so they put him in office, and King Faisal denounces the British domination and proclaims Iraq for the Iraqis. So he stabbed the British in the back, just like it was happening to us right now. And as predicted, the Sunni and the Shiite clerics declared holy war against the British, and they started killing the British officials and killing the British soldiers. Guess what's happening there now? If Bush and them had only known how to read a history book. And so in only a year or two, the British press and the public, you know, they got pretty hung up on this whole thing and opposed Churchill for wasting British lives and money to try and force Iraqis to accept an occupation that they despised. Does that sound familiar? And even the British troops begged to return home. Does that sound familiar? You know, Winnie Churchill, supposedly is President Bush's role model, he withdrew from there. He knew better than to stay the course of a failed policy. I don't think George Bush learned anything from history. But then if you haven't studied history, how could you possibly learn from it? But the problem is, we've remained. our Iraqi government survives only because it's hidden inside the green zone of Baghdad with a small army of bodyguards. Paid for by the American public, by the way. Elsewhere, violence rules almost everywhere. And the Iraqis are losing faith in their Prime Minister, Maliki, who's absolutely unable to halt the violence. And yet we insist that Iraq can become a democratic model for the rest of the Muslim states in the Middle East. What an absurd claim. But our faith in the democratic elections has been totally misplaced. And again, you only have to go back and check recent history. Don't go way back. Recent history. Back in 1992 in Algeria, Islamic militants won their election. And in 2006, elections in the Gaza Strip, the home of the Palestinians, they gave victory to the violent Islamic terrorist of Hamas. And the militants also did well in the recent Egyptian elections. And yet our leaders greeted the Iraqi elections as some sort of a success. And they called it a success, although the winning Shia majority hoped to put Iraq on a road to becoming an authoritarian Islamic state. That's exactly what they're after. This government that we put in that they elected. And so then we have Iran, Iraq's powerful neighbor and a big enemy of the United States. They're the main beneficiary of the chaos that we've created. They've got 70 million subjects. They've got support for terrorists and potential nuclear capability. I don't know why these clowns in our government couldn't see that Iran is a far greater threat than Iraq ever was. And moreover, the government we created in Iraq is getting closer and closer to Iran. While Iran, according to the American military, is sending arms to the Shia militia, and by killing tens of thousands of Iraqis, we've enraged Muslims everywhere, all over the world, and absolutely multiplied recruits for terrorism. And our own intelligence agencies have recently reported that. This recent NIE report that no one wants to talk about, and they don't. So given the consequences of this terrible, ill-considered invasion, it seems criminal to sacrifice more American soldiers and dollars to support our enemies and trap our troops in what is absolutely, positively a civil war. Why doesn't somebody come out and say it? You know, just common morality would dictate that we try and repair the destruction we've caused. But we don't even have the power to do that. We've been caught in our own trap, and we should admit that we brought ruin to Iraq. We should just admit it. And it seriously damaged our own interest and aided our enemies in a big, big way. These are the consequences of ignoring history when making present policy. We should leave, and we should leave right now. I don't give a damn. I don't agree with everybody that says, let's give them a year's timetable, let's give them 2 years, let's give them 6 months. I say we tell them in 90 days we're out of there. That's what I think. Everything that this administration has come up with as an excuse to be there has been wrong, horribly wrong. Everything. Tell me what they've been right about. The oil would pay for the war. They would greet us as liberators. Rumsfeld said a few weeks, a few days, I doubt a few months. Piece of cake. Nothing to it. And here we are, looking at carnage every single day in that hellhole that we've helped create. And yet, 30-some-odd percent of the people of the United States of America goes, right on, George. Right on, George. You represent our values. We're behind you, George. We're just as much idiots as you are, George. will follow you through the gates of hell, George. Because you're a good Christian man. And we really like that. I don't know. I've had enough of that. I really have. I've had enough of it. I hate to even turn on the TV and watch the news anymore. We have to. 866-546-5254. You've got plenty of time to call in if you'd like to give us a call. 866-546-5254. Love to hear from you. Have you seen the latest figures out of George Washington University? Dirty little secret of the Iraq and Afghanistan conflict? About one of every four veterans of the Bush's regime's global war on terror has filed a disability claim with the Veterans Administration. Perhaps just as importantly, the VA stonewalled the NSA's Freedom of Information Act request for nearly 9 months, and they finally released it today. Imagine this. Only after the archive administratively appealed to the VA's no documents claim and advised the VA that it prepared to file a lawsuit did the agency manage to locate the records. One is a January 30th, 2006 document saying compensation and pension benefits activity amongst 464,000 veterans deployed to the global war on terror. It reports that more than 150,000 deployed Operation Enduring Freedom Afghanistan and Operation Iraqi Freedom veterans out of more than 560,000 veterans of the global war on terrorism filed disability compensation and pension benefit claims with the VA. They've granted 104,000 claims already. They've got 35,000 more pending right now. And most of them are with people with over 20% disability. Imagine that. These are not little Band-Aid things. These are permanent disabilities. It's far worse than what we thought. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Yeah, Guy, this is Sarge. I wanted to mention something. I got an email yesterday from MoveOn.org, and it was about one of our soldiers over there sent in and said that what's happening is these contractors are being trained to do jobs that they are that the military knows how to do, and these contractors don't have the training to do it. Meanwhile, the ones that know how to do it are being dispatched to do guard duty and stuff like this, and they don't know how to do that because they're not trained. So that's what's going on. We are actually training people to be untrained.
And they're getting paid...
Being paid outrageous sums.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's just. But I just happened to think about that, and I wanted to get it in before your show ended. So I'm gonna hang up. I just wanted to let you know.
Well, thank you, Sarge. That just adds. That just adds to the puzzlement here of how can this be happening? You know.
Yeah, it's crazy.
It is crazy.
I mean, I served in two branches of the military, and this is crazy. I mean, if I had it to do over again, there's no way I would serve in this military like it is today. Anybody goes in, it's just begging for trouble. I wouldn't do it.
Sarge, let me ask you a question. It's a personal. Sure. It's a personal question. How is your treatment at the VA hospitals when you go?
Well, personally, I've heard some people say they get good treatment, but most I talk to and what I personally have had has been worse than worse. It's just, you know, they think you're there for a handout. If you are not 100%, they just kind of blow you off no matter what your problem is.
Well, they've also cut the funding tremendously over the years as well. So
it's not funded right. And
no.
I've actually seen shootings in a VA hospital here in Jackson.
Whoa.
Because the doctor just blew off his patients, and one of them came in and went berserk on him and killed him.
Oh, boy. Oh, man.
I'm going to let you go, Guy. Thank you a lot.
Thank you, Sarge. Good to hear from you. Men go and risk their lives. And women. Go risk their lives in the service of this country. And are are treated so badly when they come home in so many different instances. I've heard it time and time again. Benefits being cut. VA funding being cut. The injuries are on the rise. We know that approximately 20,000 GIs have been officially wounded in these conflicts, but 150,000 have filed for service-related disability claims. That's because you have to meet a certain level of disability that significantly impedes your normal daily functions every day for the rest of your lives to be considered disabled. So once again, the Bush regime has been lying to us about the cost in blood and treasury of their fiasco for control of that region and the oil that is underneath it. Makes you ashamed. It does make you ashamed. And like you said, anything over 20% disability is a serious disability. And right now, there's 13,000 at 30%, 11,500 at 40%, 6,000 at 50%, 6,000 at 60%, 3,600 at 70%, 2,300 at 80%, almost 1,000 at 90%, and 1,520 at 100%, and 2,750-some dead in Bush's folly. That's exactly what it is. It's Bush's folly. And by God, the rest of my life, I will not call this the Iraq War. It is Bush's war. And that's what it should be named, and that it should be put in all the history books as Bush's war of preference. Because that's exactly what it is. There was no need for it. It should never have been. The reasons were never there. It could have prevented, could have been prevented, and it was all based on lies. They like to say bad intelligence. I like to say absolutely, positively, with no question whatsoever, lies. Lies because the intelligence was massaged and cherry-picked. And that's lying. No other way around it. Awfully glad you joined us here today on the Guy James Show. Filling in for Bruce this hour. I do want you to stay tuned. Bob Kincaid's going to be coming up in just a moment or two. He'll be with you right up until 10 o'clock. So hang in there. You've been listening to the Guy James Show on the Head On Radio Network. And don't forget, you've heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth.